Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. On Leaving in the Ring, I'm your host David Duenas with my co-host Gabriel Montoya and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Anyways, hope everybody had a good weekend. Nobody got pulled over for drinking and driving, and hopefully nobody got thrown off the balcony at the Madison Square Garden for the Margarito and Miguel Cotto fight. You know what, man? A really good fight. I was really entertained throughout the whole card. Except for the Mike Jones. And unfortunately for me, Mike Jones with Sebastian Lujan. And Mike, to me now, just is the kind of guy that he has a lot of talent. He can definitely make an impact at 147, Gabriel. But he just fights at every guy's opponent's level. You know what I mean? I just don't, you know, when he needs to be up to par, he does it because either he's in danger or the guy's bringing it to him. But Lujan wasn't really bringing anything. He was really shelling up. He was just moving forward and had a lot of wing shots where, you know, Mike Jones could have done a little bit more by sitting in the pocket because those shots would have really went behind the head. You know, he could have went under the shots because it was so wide and looping that he could have stayed in that pocket, worked the body, come back to the head. He could have gave Sebastian some angles, but he didn't do that. You know what I mean? He kind of more or less allowed Sebastian Lujan to survive, allowed him to continue in the fight when you could kind of really see that he had a sharp-worn fighter that at any given day, if he would have landed a really hard amount of combos, either the ref would step in, his corner might have been merciful and jumped in, or himself as a fighter could have known that it was the end of days for him in the ring and would have been stopped. But Mike Jones didn't do any of the things I just mentioned. What he did is he basically fought a sloppy fight, not a disciplined fight, and he fought a Sebastian Lujan fight. I don't know what your take was about that, but it was pretty bad in my point. Where I was thinking, you know what, Mike Jones is I think this is the best we're ever going to see him because the guy just doesn't know how to step in and be Mike Jones.
Well, you know, my take on Jones, I said this before the fight, and even before the fight with the rematch with Soto Carras, was that this is a guy that he's a physical specimen. You look at him, you're like, where does he lose the weight to make 147? And I think he's losing something on the scales. And I think the first fight with Soto Carras, where he pretty much shot his load beginning of the fight, wasn't able to get off the rest of the fight because he was tired. I think that changed him, and now he fights like a guy worried about running out of gas. I really think, considering how much 154 is heating up, I mean, it's as stacked a division as you can ask for. To me, he's a 154, and yet he's kind of stuck. Like Steve Kim and I talked about this on Next Round this week, which is out today, actually, I think. In that, you know, they've invested so much time. Russell Phelps has invested so much time and energy maneuvering him to a 147-pound fight, a title, that to move him to 154 kind of just negates all that work he just did. So I think that they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. He's dead at the weight. I think anybody that can punch and can push him back, that's going to be a problem for him. Now, fortunately for him, I think they're maneuvering him towards the Randall Bailey fight. And I think that he can win that fight, maybe pick up a title, maybe even just eventually, you know, vacate it or maybe squeeze out a couple defenses, make a little bit of money. But, he's kind of stuck. I really look at his body. He's a 154 at least.
Right. Yeah, he's a big boy.
160. He's a big boy. But he doesn't have a name. He doesn't really have a draw. So if you move him to 154, look at all those names. Who would want to fight a rejuvenated Mike Jones? On paper, he's a problem for everybody. But yeah, what I saw in him is exactly, you know, it was like a sparring session at times, and not a very good one. He definitely did enough to win.
Right. Yeah, no, he did.
He didn't do anything to impress, you know, that was the problem. But I really think it's not that he's like, he's been Chad Dawson or anything like that. You know, and Chad, I think, you know, has some exciting fights ahead of him. But I think it's more a case that, I don't even think he got Edwin Rosario against Soto Peraz. I think what you're seeing, and you see it sometimes, fighters like Miguel Cotto had some trouble with the weight. He chose to be more all action. But in Jones's case, he's choosing to be, you know, a much more economical fighter and kind of try to pick people apart, maybe land that one good shot, but do it through boxing. It's not exciting to watch. I'd like to see him move up at this point and just call it, you know, your body matured before you got to the title. And that's just the way it is.
You know, when I'm watching him, and some folks are tweeting to us here on Leaving the Ring saying that might have been he was a little worried about gassing out in the later rounds. Could have been the case. Definitely could have been the case, because that's what happened with Soto Carras. But at the same time, you know, when you got a guy that's been talked up a lot, like Mike Jones has been for the past couple of years, is you have to. He's got to now just come to it where he has to separate himself from the C-class to the B-class fighters so that we can really put him in the slot of an A-class fighter. And what we saw Saturday night on pay-per-view, which ended up sold out, Madison Square Garden, is that if anything, if you wanted to show that you were the next star or potential star at 147 and possibly moving up to 154 to the stack 154, you had to do something, you know, out of the box. You know, as some would say, out of the box. And what I saw was a guy that just can't do that. He just can't put the foot on the pedal. He can't seem to get himself out of that slot of being a B-quality fighter at the moment. He's got the skills to look like an A-quality fighter, but it always levels down to me that he needs the opponent to make him look that good. You know, maybe bring out the A-quality, but that's my whole point here, Gabe, is that if you need that, that might be a problem for you because we might find out a little bit more.
If he got that, though, I think he'd get beaten.
I think so, too. That's what I'm pointing out.
Yeah, like if you fought an Andre Berto, and, you know, granted, Berto's able to be dropped, so Berto can get through his shots early, you know, and pressure him and make him work for, you know, all 3 minutes of every round. And throw big shots, maybe even miss big shots, tires you out even more, I'd give Berto a really good chance of winning that fight. Ortiz, also, you'd have to kind of give him a shot at
right.
You know, make him the favorite at winning those fights. Because they could fight it that way, to fight at a high clip. He hasn't shown that. And he hasn't really even been with anything I would consider a real puncher. So I don't really know about the chin of Mike Jones. He's been with, like, pressure volume punchers for days. But he hasn't been in with a guy that can really crack. So, again, I just think it's time for him to move up to 154. I think he'd be rejuvenated. He's got a good record. It wouldn't take him long it might take him a while to get through the rankings. But, I mean, think about 154 with Mike Jones at it, even without Mike Jones at it. You just lost Pavel Wallach. We'll talk about that later. You know, but we got Delvin Rodriguez, who's an action fighter, Kirkland, Angulo's kind of out of the mix until he really solidifies his trainer deal and his visa situation.
Come back to the States, like he said he wanted to, you know, like he said, what he really wants to do, he said, you know, and get that situated, because he even mentioned, you know, if I can't get back to the States, then he's going to hang up the gloves, you know, I mean, you could really tell when he was on Leaving the Ring, he was really distraught about the whole situation. About the visa, which, you know, there's a little bit of confusion. You know, I don't want to get too much into that there, but there was a little bit of confusion of whether or not he did have the visa or whatever happened with that. But going back with Mike Jones, you know, I think you're absolutely right. But, you know, I think he's in more of a safe haven being at 147 if his skill level is not what we think it should be at. Going at 154, a B-class fighter would probably be able to expose him a little bit more. When we're talking about that, he just doesn't seem to step out of what the opponent in front of him is doing to be extra special, you know. I want to move on to that.
That's the thing.
Yeah, the whole thing here, you know. And I think that's the question now with Mike Jones is, are you going to always fight at the level of the opponent, or are you going to make it your fight, the Mike Jones fight? You know, Wallach, Poel Wallach and Devon Rodriguez, I have picked Wallach to, you know, step it up and make the adjustments. Not really make adjustments, but just go in there and do exactly what he's known to do. Devon Rodriguez, though, fought a much better fight in terms of what he was doing. The only thing that I have to say, I don't know what you guys were seeing, but I was a little kind of irritated, I think. You know, I think that's the right word to use when I was watching the fight, was he keep measuring with that left hand, and the ref never called it. Now, not being a sore loser here, okay? Yeah, I picked the wrong guy, but I was like, you can't do that, you know? And he kept doing it repeatedly, and Wallach, being the warrior that he is, never complained about it, but there were some shots that he didn't see coming because the glove was in his face, and it was basically measuring him out for the right hand to be dropped. Now, Devon Rodriguez did the perfect job. He kept moving. He made sure he didn't get himself backed up against those ropes. He worked the outside, and when they got in close, he worked the inside. You know, Wallach just didn't know what to do with them. Didn't know how to cut the ring off, keep repeating the same thing, which was come forward. Didn't move the head, you know, because there is ways of eliminating that measured jab. It's to just bob and weave and work the body and come back to the head. He couldn't really catch that rhythm when Rodriguez was catching the rhythm. And at one point, I thought Rodriguez was gassing out, but he got second. He's got his second win, and he just came back, man. Full flesh, full fire, and he just started dropping some heavy bombs. Wallach, you know, now to his retirement. And really, really, I just got to applaud the guy. Blue-collar fighter, came to fight, entertained us on Saturday night, and didn't give up. At one point, his legs were so shaky, Gabriel, I thought the guy was going to fold and fall or be dropped, or maybe his corner jumped in. But they knew they had a blue-collar guy, and he was going to keep welding away to try to at least get something, muster something up that was going to turn the tables and maybe shake up a little bit of Rodriguez's momentum, but it never happened. You know what I mean? He reaching, but he never seemed to grab a hold of it.
You know, and last word prediction on Mike Jones. He's gonna fight Randall Bailey. He's going to get that IBF title. The
right.
Mandatory defense is Carson Jones. So they'll defend there, make even more money, and then he'll move up. This fight, though, Rodriguez-Wallach, this is what I said last week when I actually – and I, this was a pick I stuck to when I had the main event pick. I feel like an idiot now. but Delvin found those little spaces. He found room for himself later on in the fight. It was a brutal first fight, and I think he came away from it the fresher guy, and it showed. He fought a very smart fight.
He kind of
came together early and then separated himself late, let his hands go, found all the right angles. And Wallach, you know, what can you say? I mean, he's just all-action warrior. I was pretty stunned. I kind of went back and forth with him a little bit, and I won't say what we really talked about it, and he just wants to be low-key about things and his retirement, but very humble, all-action warrior, man. And,
right.
And you can't, you know, everybody wants to get to that pinnacle and be Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao, but even if you don't, at least you'll be remembered, and He gave us two really good fights with Delvin Rodriguez. The Yuri Form stoppage was awesome. It was unexpected. He had a nice career. You know, I mean, it wasn't filled with, like, all these top great names. You know, he had the long fight with E.J. Smith is probably the most notable other fight that he had. But every time Paul Wallach fought, he gave everything that he had. He cared that we paid money to watch him. Where we're taking time to watch him, and he made sure that he was entertaining. That's all you can ask. He'll definitely be remembered as an action fighter. And, you know, it is pretty shocking, though, man, to retire.
I know. I was shocked. I was shocked by that. You know, I didn't know whether maybe there was some medical problems or, you know, that's why when I talked to you, I said, did he mention why he was going to retire? But, you know, everybody has
He didn't even say why. Yeah, he didn't say why. You know.
Yeah, you know. I don't know. You know, I still thought the guy had enough still to make a run against anybody at 154. I thought, you know, a Wallach versus Angulo, after we find out what's happened to Angulo, would be a great matchup. You know, in terms of making steps up in your career, Yeah, you're going to see some particular fights that really don't do a whole lot, like the, you know, like Gotti versus Ward. But those were fun fights to watch. And I thought Wallach had plenty of those fun fights for his career. You know, yeah, not big money fights, not the FU money type of fights, but definitely fights that we were going to sit back and go, man, that's going to be a great matchup. And we might have another fight of a year on our hands here. But unfortunately, you know, he had his reasons, and we have to respect that, you know, warrior, because that's what he is, and appreciate at least the fights that he's given us, and let him bow out the way he wants to. And, you know, since there's a lot of fighters that don't bow out the way they should, you know, they end up bowing out in a memory where it leaves us a bad memory, like Roy Jones Jr. still going at it in the ring. He could take a little bit of what Wallach's doing right now by bowing out and saying, okay, I'm done with the sport. I am done with the sport, you know.
Well, you could at least recognize that a certain aspect, not the commentary, because I think Jones does a fine job. I mean, he's actually, I believe, nominated by the Boxing Writers Association for Best Broadcaster of the Year. You know, he's not alone in that category, but he's in that category. But you got to realize that on some level, boxing's done with you. And it's not even like the Denis Lebedev fight. I always thought was a suicide. I'm like, this dude, you're going to Russia. Dude hits hard.
Right.
He's craftier than he appears. None of it was good. And he gets knocked out in like scary fashion. But he's fighting Max Alexander. If I regularly did my mismatch report, Max Alexander would be a fighter that I would have to flag. I mean, he hasn't won a fight. 2007, April, against Demetrius Jenkins, who was 21-14 at the time, and on a six-fight at least losing streak. He lost to Sam Solomon, then to Brian Vera, both in 2007. Hit a draw with Rob Calloway in 2008. And Rob Calloway was like 59-8-1, so he's a past-it guy. Then he loses to Ali Ismailov in 2008, Alexander Aliyev in 2009, and Moyoyo Mensah in 2009. Hasn't fought since. Now he's fighting Roy Jones.
Well, we know why he's fighting Jones.
Yeah,
you know?
At the Civic Center in Atlanta.
But it still doesn't make
Atlanta,
it right,
Georgia.
You know what I mean? It still doesn't make it right. He's got to...
It makes it all kinds of wrong. Like,
yeah.
On both levels, it's wrong. You know, I mean, if you look at Roy Jones' record, it ain't much better. He got knocked out in 10 in his last one, then before that at UD, then knocked out in one round. He's not exactly riding high on Easy Street.
You know,
I don't understand why people let fights like this happen.
Exactly. You know, one time Roy Jones' nickname was Machine Gun. Now we got to say it's Blank Guns. Or used to call him Superman. Now we got to say he's not Superman. The powers have been lifted off the poor guy. You know, I'd like to see him just retire. We've had him a few times on Leave It in the Ring, and it's just sad to see him continue and possibly, you know, he's putting his health on the line. It's almost like Jermaine Taylor. He's making his comeback, and it's just, you know, it's not good. It's not good for themselves, let alone with boxing, you know. But let's go with Brandon.
You know, we just had another ring death. I don't understand why commissions allow something like this to happen when people are dying, you know, and not even it was like a young champion in a WBC fight. His name's escaping me right now. Somebody tweeted at me to help me out. But, I mean, now you're putting in a 40-something-year-old man against a guy who hasn't fought in 2 years and hasn't won, and, you know, since 2007. It's just, where's the commission in this? Who sanctioned this fight? Who said it was okay that this goes down? This is our sport, and it's things like this. Everybody always says Bob Arum's killing boxing. He's not killing boxing. He's actually promoting big events. He's just doing them with the pieces that he invests in and trying not to line anybody else's pockets. Is it great for the sport? Maybe not. It's great business, and the product's good.
Right.
It's things like this that kill our sport. More than anything, it lowers our credibility. It makes us look like animals. It just sickens me, dude.
Yeah, definitely. You know,
coffee.
You know. I want to talk about Brandon Rios, who He had a, it was a really good fight with Murray. I don't know what you thought, but I thought it was a good fight for him. I know a lot of folks were a little concerned about the weight issue. Wasn't making the weight during the weigh-in. Had to go back, try to shed, 6 ounces of weight to make it back in, to be at 135, I believe. And so a lot of guys were saying, you know, this is a big problem. We've been talking about this a long time here on Leaving the Ring. Even when I went down and saw, to go see him in Oxnard, you know, he's a big kid, and when we had Robert Garcia on last week, I even said, you know, how is he still maintaining, or not even maintaining, because we saw what happened in the weigh-in, but making that weight, you know. I don't really see how they're going to continue to get there, because eventually it could possibly backfire on him. You know, might be a little too weak to you know, recoup, and but man, is he not fun to watch? I mean, the guy, he's just strong, comes forward. He's everything that a Mexican fighter is supposed to look like. And when we talk about being ruthless in the ring, the guy just, you know, his nickname fits him perfect. Bam Bam. That's just what exactly what he goes out and to do out in the ring. He Bam Bam. Murray was trying to keep up with him and do the same type of style and game plan that Rios has really cemented himself on doing in his whole team, but guess what? It just did not. It did not work for him. And I think a lot of folks, a lot of guys that do step in with Rios, they go, you know, this guy's a little easier for me to hit. Maybe I could stand and trade with them. But at the end, they find out there's a reason why this guy is successful in that style, in that shell style, coming forward, banging to the body, dropping uppercuts. And, you know, a lot of times, Gabe, I don't know if you've noticed this, but when he throws uppercuts, they're at a really weird angle, and you can't really see them when they're being landed, because – and they're really in close. They're not – he doesn't get any wind in between them. He just lifts them up, and they do a – they just do tons and tons of damage to the guy who's in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to read this because it's going to speak to my point. I agree with a lot of what you just said about Rios, but this is the article. Reuters reported this. Russian boxer, it was a light heavyweight, Roman Simakov, was carried from the ring on a stretcher after being knocked out in a WBC Asian Boxing Council title fight on Monday, and he's died. He had brain surgery after being rushed to the hospital, never regained consciousness, and died on Thursday.
Wow.
The fighter talked about that boxed him. They described the fight. Simakov was knocked down in the sixth round by Russian compatriot Sergei Kovalev, but got up and was able to continue before receiving numerous blows to the head in the seventh when he was knocked down.
Wow.
My aim was to outbox Simakov, not necessarily knock him out, Kovalev said to the Russian media on Thursday. But after the fourth round, I had noticed something was wrong with Simakov. My last punch was not as powerful as the one I had hit just before that. It was Simakov's first knockout defeat and only his second loss in 21 fights. Then you take that young, healthy guy, and then you talk about the fighters, you know, Jones and Alexander, we were talking about. You think about just how much danger there is. And the reason I bring it up at this point, too, is Rios, you know, it was weird with the weight. He came in. I think he first weighed 36.4, then he stepped off and it was 35.6. He tried to go back with the 6. On the third attempt, he came back and he's even a pound heavier, 36.5, something like that, or 36.6, somewhere in there. And I guess it's because they moved the scale while HBO was doing a Q&A, so it was calibrated for one spot, and
right,
then it was off when he came back. They didn't protest, but he had to weigh in, like, I think 146 or 147 the next day at 9 a.m., he did that, but he could weigh whatever he wanted to on the night of the fight. And you got to think, bringing him down in weight, I mean, I heard he was having trouble speaking, that he was just not himself.
He looked terrible,
he was
man.
That way.
You know?
He was awful. That is a ring death waiting to happen, or brain damage waiting to happen. They both were in there jackhammering shots, and Murray, I think, gambled that he'd get tired, and he didn't. And he is much craftier than people give him credit for. Some of the shots he throws in the inside are masterful the way he takes apart an opponent. But I just worry about his overall long-term health, probably putting on 20-plus pounds heading into that fight. You know, they rehydrated him correctly. Victor Conte apparently was contacted. They gave him, like, Celtic sea salt and bathed him in Epsom salts. He was as good to go as you could be, from what I understand. But still, you can't keep doing that.
I know. I mean, you just look at the guy's. The guy's face was just practically sucked in. I mean, his cheeks—you could see the outline of his teeth. It's that's bad. You know, I look at him every time. I mean, even the last time he had stepped into the ring, you look at him, and you're just like, God, this guy doesn't look healthy. You know, and he doesn't have any color in his skin. You just sit there and you wonder. And then a lot of fighters, and this is nothing new in boxing. This has been happening for years and years and years. But we've seen the effects of draining yourself to make a particular weight when your body is basically telling you, like, hey, I can't do this anymore. You know, I can't do this anymore. It does deteriorate muscle. It does a lot of things to your body that later on you may not see the effects right now, but you're definitely going to see them maybe 3 to 5 years down the line. So I like to see the guy just leave 135 and jump up to 140. I don't know how well he would look at 147, but his body really is looking at me more and more as a 140-pound fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there was people that were going after him on Twitter. He's lazy and screw him, and you know, they're still just upset about the Freddie Roach video.
He's lazy. Where are they getting lazy from? A guy's dropping how much weight? Literally, almost 30 to 20 pounds to make 135. That's not a lazy person.
Yeah, when a dude misses by like 0.5, 0.6, he's not lazy. His body said, you know what, man, we just don't do that anymore.
There's nothing more to drop out. You know what I mean? That to me, that was a fart. You know, and I was basically saying that, dude, that's a fart. Just fart, and there goes the four. There goes the six.
Some of it, you know, I think too was which that's hilarious. I have a prune. I think some of it was him traveling from Mexico City, different elevation, heading over to Atlantic City. You know, I guess they said it was cold where he was. He was having trouble losing the weight. You know, in Mexico, it just didn't come off the way it does here. There's a lot of little factors. When you change a whole training camp, you're messing with all kinds of things. Not just I'm in the mountains of Otomi chasing chickens and lifting rocks. There's a lot of other things that go into it. So that small a margin of error, you know, who knows what that was. But the main thing is that you're never going to see him at 135 again. It just ain't going to happen. But so much the better, dude. 140 just got good because we're losing guys at 140. You know, Bradley Khan, rather, is probably going to go to 147 next.
Right.
I
say he should not do. I mean, he still needs a lot to clean out. If you want to be considered the best, clean out the division. He's got a fight coming up this Saturday against Lamont Peterson, who we've had on. We've had them both on, but recently with Lamont talking about the Khan fight. But to me, Khan has unfinished business at 147. Everybody's chasing the dragon, which is at 147, Pacquiao or Mayweather. But, you know, to me is you know, if you're going to jump up and not be successful, you jump back down. You know, and because I don't know how a lot of fight fans are feeling about this, but I feel like there's a lot of fights really being kind of stolen away from us by guys jumping up, chasing the big number fights. You know, we're really losing a lot of great potential fights that could possibly make you a star, you know, really make you into something. And I know you want that overnight success, that overnight stardom, but whatever happened to the traditional fighters where they beat the rankings up to become a star, you know, where it took them years and years to finally get that plateau of finally saying, here, I'm here, I have arrived. To me, it's basically how everything else is in this world. Everybody wants to make it to the top fast. And then when they fall off the top, they just don't know how to get back up because they've never climbed the mountain to get to the top.
Hell of a metaphor. Yeah, I think that, you know, we're seeing a kind of a changing of the guard right now, or a shift within all the different divisions. I think 160 is still kind of stale, but it's maturing. All the young fighters there.
Right.
Are becoming ready for Martinez. But still, there's no clear money person. 154, you know, well, there is one clear one. There's Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., but he ain't fighting any of those people.
Right.
And then you got 154, which is a bunch of guys that are all kind of in Martinez's boat. They're all, capable. They're all action fighters. They all want to get down. Some of them have belts, but none of them really have a name or a draw other than Canelo, and he ain't fighting any of them.
God, what happened to our Mexican fighters, man? I mean, come on.
Seriously.
Canelo Chavez, somebody.
147 and 140 are the same way. You know, you got guys moving up. I think Berto's in a great spot. He's just sitting right there. If he can beat Ortiz, the winner of that fight can really have some big-name opponents in Devin Alexander, who draws if you travel for him. If you care about gate and a lot of people seeing it, then you're going to do that. You can take him on. Bradley's going to be moving up. Khan's going to be moving up. He's a draw. The dude that wins Berto Ortiz, too, is in, like, a pimp seat. He's just ready to go.
Yeah.
And make some money. And, cause neither of those guys are a draw, but they'll be the champion.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
I can't wait. I think 2012, we're going to have a big year. I think boxing is going to be, if they do it right. And speaking of that, the fight we wanted to talk about, let's get to the main event, and we'll talk about the future.
Yeah, let's get to that main event. If you guys want to call in right now, you certainly can. The phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. Here on Leaving the Ring, you can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya. But, you know, you have to go through the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. He'll get you in a private chat room and ask you what you want to talk about. Anyways, let's get to that main event. You know, some folks got some mixed feelings. Some folks saw exactly what I saw, which was what Pedro Diaz has done. And I know everybody's really applauding what Cotto did on Saturday night. But I really got to honestly applaud Pedro Diaz because I was not a believer that he could really change him up and possibly take him back into more of an amateur boxing style, which I thought that needed to be added to his arsenal against Antonio Margarito. I thought we were going to see the same Miguel Cotto back up, you know, because he's had that big magnet on the back of his back and he tends to kind of go backwards and get stuck there. But with adding Pedro Diaz, the Cuban trainer that's had great success with the Cuban Olympians, he was taught a little bit more of a reminder of his feet, using his footwork, getting out of the way, really not committing to a lot of those punches. I know a lot of folks were like, oh, man, those were big shots. I didn't really see the really big shots. I saw shots that were thrown, and like I've mentioned before, Margarito's head is just like it's a bobblehead. You hit it, and it just gets thrown back because he's coming forward and he doesn't have any head movement. But what I saw was Miguel really throw his flurries and didn't sit on them just for the reason for after he throws his combos, he had enough time to get out of there. And we saw that. Now, I did see him kind of gassing out in those later rounds, but to me it was like rounds being like minutes being taken off so he can just keep some reserve in him. You know, to make sure that he didn't gas out, he didn't make the same mistakes, you know, but I did predict that the ring doctor was going to jump in and was going to stop this fight, but I thought it was a great call because within that second round, his eye was shut. I mean, I know Margarito was spinning it. He was, you know, they were giving him the fingers, you know, how many fingers I got, he waved in front of his face, and he was telling the numbers, but that eye is a problem. It reminded me of David Reed, the All-American Dream, the droopy eye. Margarito had a droopy eye that night, and he was not only fighting a guy that was moving and throwing perfect combinations and being light in his feet, but he was fighting that droopy eye. Gabriel, I don't know what you thought, but I give kudos to Cotto, but a lot of kudos to Pedro Diaz because they called it. Could have been a different fight if the eye wasn't droopy. Might have, could have, I don't know, but I think the game plan they had was a solid one because it worked so well.
Yeah, I thought he did everything that I said he would do last week before I took my pick back.
I know. What was going on?
I just had a feeling. I'd heard, you know, Tony is eating grapes on the weigh-in and looking good, and I liked his attitude. I thought Cotto had too much pressure on him. We also forget that Cotto, and I think the fight showed it, he's kind of a fragile guy. He didn't even get hit as much as the first time, and he was still pretty marked up. I think it was a race against the eye, like you said, you know, before the fight. We knew that Margarito, you know, as soon as that eye closed in the third, I was like, this fight's over. you know, they're not going to let it go.
I was really surprised that they let it go as far as they did, just because
they went to 9, you know. But
right.
Yeah, but I think it was because he was actually doing pretty good. He did better than I thought he would do.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, I mean, if I stayed with my pick, the fight looked a bit like I expected it to. But, you know, to me, you know, Margarito, he didn't get off as much as he needed to. Cotto kept it in the same, you know, kept it in the center of the ring, kept turning off of the ropes rather than staying there and trying to fight off of the ropes. Like he did kind of well against Mosley, which I think led him to believe he could do it against Margarito. And, you know, he did that late against Mosley. And against Margarito, he did it early, and it cost him way too many shots to the body. This time he's like, screw it. I'm just going to go to the center of the ring, and I'm going to box and stay light on my feet and maintain my energy. I thought Cotto was tiring a little bit late, but still I didn't think Margarito had – maybe he had one last big rally in him, but he just couldn't seem to get Cotto into a place in the ring where he could let that rally go. Or maybe he just didn't have it, but I don't know about you.
I thought he did. You know what? I really thought that he had – you know,
he had energy.
Honestly – I saw a fresh Margarito, and this, you know, I've had a few people that were emailing me that were upset, you know, like, oh, Margarito was, you know, he was finally getting to him, et cetera, the eye, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, then you should be happy for Margarito, because a lot of folks were really counting him out, basically saying he was shot. I didn't see a shot Antonio Margarito.
I didn't see that,
you know. And
mentally,
know,
he's definitely not shot. He
no.
definitely thinks he could still get you, and you got to get the sense coming out of it that Cotto, he didn't feel like he got away with one, but that they,
right.
like Steve put it perfectly, they kept the narrative. Like the fight started to bend a little bit for Cotto, and then they stopped the fight. And it saves the narrative that he outboxed him all night long and boxed and fought smart all the way down, fight over, and let's just move on to the next one.
You know, and too, man, to go back with the whole thing about the ring jumping in, I mean, the ring doctor jumping in and stopping the fight, and, you know, the fact that, like I said, I was very surprised that they let it go that far, 9 rounds, but I kind of got the sense, well, the reason why they did that, too, was because they had a packed house, and they were looking at, the, you know, the crowd here was electrifying, let's give them what they want. You know, and two, Margarito didn't look like a shot fighter. He was a guy that kept coming forward, didn't stop trying to land something big on Cotto. But just like on when they faced each other the first time, it was Margarito's special night. This time around, it was Cotto's special night. And, you know, some people were saying, well, now this proves that Margarito wore plaster of Paris. And I was like, where did you get that from? He couldn't land a single shot on the guy.
Well, and he's forgetting all the beatings that he took. You know, he got knocked out by Mosley. He got the hell kicked out of him by Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah. Right.
It was basically like a public execution. They're like, no, my eye fell on the canvas. It's fine. Just keep beating me. I deserve this.
Right.
You know, and this is what the fight fans wanted. But you got to take those things into account. I mean, he's a volume puncher. His ability to absorb damage is one of his great strengths. The other one is that he can get hit in the face while he's throwing punches and landing them on you. He can't do that anymore. Not in the way he used to. He still fights in that style.
What
he's never going to be a boxer. So, the idea that he didn't have wraps, this proves that he had wraps, is just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, it's not even that. It's ridiculous in a sense that if you watch the first fight, Cotto trapped himself and was trading with them. You know, and a fight plan that didn't not fit him, you know, especially against Antonio Margarito. Margarito needs you in front of him to land big shots. This time around, he learned his lesson. He was like, look, I'm not doing this again. That's why I'm bringing Pedro Diaz into the camp. I'm not going to go back out there and subject myself and taking a big beat down again and get my face all smashed up. So I saw a lot of shots that Margarito was throwing but missing. I saw a lot of things that Cotto didn't do this time around like he did the first time, you know, didn't back up to the ropes like I mentioned earlier, didn't stand there long enough so the momentum of Margarito could pick up. He really had, in my opinion, he had a frustrated Antonio Margarito in front of him. One thing, too, it was a big plus is that he just didn't hold Margarito. He literally, you know, Huggy Bear'd him and made sure, which is a very intelligent move, he made sure the ref intervened so that it gave him enough time to separate himself from Antonio Margarito. So Margarito, again, had to build that momentum of chasing him down, and Cotto had enough time to get a breather and land some combinations, you know. So this whole thing about the whole plaster of Paris, I like to kind of just throw that out the door because it doesn't hold up to what we saw on Saturday night. You know, I say, hey, let's applaud the guy what he did. It was a great performance. It really puts him back into the hat of names that Cotto can really kind of dabble with. You know, I like to see Miguel Cotto go after Canelo. I like to see Canelo step up and fight him. Devon Rodriguez, you know, James Kirtland. There's a lot of potential big fights out there for Miguel Cotto right now. He's in a great position to pick the names out of the hat.
He is, without question. You know, he's and that line of thinking is like about as scientifically advanced as the original bad hand wraps that Margarito tried to use. Just not very. He's got options, and it's interesting. You know, you look at, you know, one camp is saying that Bob Arum was talking to investors for Pacquiao, and you really look at the numbers for that fight. We've said it all along. It's you know, what Steve was saying this to me on Monday. It's about the money at this point. No other obstacle lies in its way. And I don't know if that fight can happen. So the best thing that happened for Pacquiao, who, you know, they're looking at Marquez 4. Nobody's really buying that. We haven't really heard much talk. But would you buy Pacquiao Cotto 2? I would. I would like to see this version of Cotto take on Pacquiao.
Pacquiao,
with a sport discipline that's going to move, that's going to use his jab. He's going to know how to tie up and, like you said, separate himself and get out of there. It's almost like a very amateur way of amateur style of way of fighting. But it was very effective. And Cotto is a guy he's very intelligent. I don't think he was in the right place mentally the first time they fought. He was also at 145 pounds. You can throw that out there. Let's see it at a catch weight of like 150. You know, let's call it 150 and get it done.
No more catch
or even, or even 147, you know.
You know,
at this point, with the superstars, catch weights, whatever, let's just make the fight happen.
Right.
I don't even care about the catch weights anymore. It's just like these guys aren't even fighting in the same boxing league as everybody else anyways. They fight who they want to fight, when they want to fight them, how they want to fight them,
yep,
for whatever belt that wants to be a part of the fight. So screw it. You know, 154 is not going to be there for Pacquiao. He's going to want something less. I say don't go lower than 150. And we got a fight.
Yeah.
Or Floyd. He could fight Floyd.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, I see that happening. I can see that happening. But right now, I think Floyd is really focused on trying to get Manny Pacquiao, since he saw what we all saw with Manny when Manny faced Marquez. I mean, he's making such a push this time around than the other times that the fight was being mentioned. Yeah. Hey, let's pass in some fight fans.
He could get him in the press again, though, and say if Pacquiao is.
I think we lost you there, Gabe.
No, you don't buy it.
You dropped out for a minute. What did you say?
I was saying that I think, you know, that Floyd could kind of assert Manny in the press like he always does. And if Manny doesn't give him that rematch and is looking at something else, Floyd can take that fight. To me, both guys gained an option that night that's really viable. I mean, I know Floyd's kind of focused on this one fight, but I think he'd rather shame Pacquiao some more than fight him immediately. I don't think the money's there. I don't think that fight happens. So somebody's going to have to look to blame the other guy for why it didn't.
Oh, I know. There's a lot of pointing fingers. And like I even tweeted that out. I really don't. You know what? I don't want to know. I don't care whose fault it is anymore. Just put up or shut up already, you know. And I see a lot of like websites just really hanging off each and every word of these guys and who they think is preventing it. Who cares now? Let's just see it happen. That's what it boils down to. And let's pass in some fight fans. A little later, we have some two guests. Not big high-profile guests, but you know what? We always like to give time to the guys that are making a name and keep trucking away to keep the sport of boxing alive here for us. And no, I know it doesn't need any help, but it's always a pleasure to put on guys that are in the sport and doing their part for us big boxing heads. So let's pass in Junior wants to talk Cotto and Margarito. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Yeah, I saw Cotto Margarito, and I was in shock to see what I saw. You know, I never seen Cotto move so well like that. And granted, it's Margarito, but just for a fighter to just, you know, pretty much a come forward fighter who just, you know, uses his footwork to just attack, and he just
right.
switched it up, and he became a really good boxer. And I'm with you guys. I want to see Pac and Cotto do it again. And I think he may not win the fight, but it'll be pretty competitive, showing that, you know, Pac hasn't really changed since he moved up.
This is my thing. If Pedro Diaz was able to adjust and really bring in that Barrera Zeke into Cotto, because the last time we saw a guy that came forward and used his aggression and his weight and his power on opponents was Marcos Antonio Barrera. Cotto made that face change, just like Barrera. So I'm really curious what Pedro Diaz can do next with him. What is going to be added to the arsenal? Because this is the first time, really, it's a whole profile for Pedro Diaz working with Miguel Cotto. So
I hope he stays with
you guys.
I hope he stays with him because I know that Emmanuel Stewart might still be in the picture, but he gave us two fights, and you know what? I wasn't impressed. He really looked like the same Cotto, but, I mean, there was some corrections, but this one's a whole different guy. And I don't know, maybe it's because, you know, Cotto had such animosity with Margarito that he just wanted to do whatever he can and learned. And you know, because Cotto's a hard-headed person. He wants to be in charge. And, you know, this and Pedro Diaz,
also,
I guess he looks up to him.
It's also, I think, a bit of a mirage in that Margarito's pretty past it. I mean, he had to take advantage of that, and he had to fight the right fight. And he fought a beautiful fight. But, you know, when you look at the potential guys that we're just talking about, Pacquiao and Floyd, based on their last performances, I would give Cotto a better shot at taking on Pacquiao, who seems to be slowing down just enough and is about the same size. I don't give him much of a chance to beat Floyd. I'd still like to see the fight.
Definitely.
So I think against a speedy guy, I think he's going to have a little bit of trouble. Even though I know Pacquiao.
I heard you guys talk about Cotto, and this does improve the Plastic Paris issue. And I kind of agree with you guys because there's a lot of variables going on with the 154 and the how shot worn both guys were, and the gloves and everything. And this doesn't improve anything. You know,
right.
you know, it doesn't prove anything that Margarito cheated or not. I mean, it's really hard. In order to prove it, you have to have the same exact fight, and that's it. That's the only way you can prove it. And this fight was 100% different. You know, and what pissed me off was that a lot of people were even saying that Margarito was coming in on the ninth and that he was going to put Cotto away. I mean, do you guys think that, you know, that Margarito actually has a chance to come back at the ninth or
I don't, you know, that eye, man, I keep going back with that eye. I mean, how much more damage was going to be done to it?
Unless he got off a really major charge and Cotto screwed up at the same time and allowed that to happen.
Which was
and got caught with something stupid.
Right.
No, the first fight was a cumulative effect of beating on him from, like, you know, that's why I've watched that fight a bunch of times, and he starts so early, and people always talk about how great Cotto was doing. They miss all the work that Margarito did in the first six rounds. And as early as Cotto's sitting on the ropes and getting hit, I think he gets his nose broken in that round.
Right.
And
that's really what
did it for him. He didn't have a broken nose this fight. He
no.
didn't sit on the ropes this fight. You know? Yeah.
And he didn't admire his work like he did the first fight. I mean, you know, Antonio Margarito was really trying to get him to step in that machismo, which Cotto didn't fall into. Every time Cotto landed something big, Margarito would, you know, he would yelp, you know, woo, you know, basically telling him, dude, you didn't do anything. Sit on your punches and fight me. And I like the fact that Cotto was like, nah, man, I'm not doing this again. I'm not going to fall for that trap. I'm just not going to sit there, you know. And he kept himself very disciplined, which I thought was going to be a very difficult thing for Cotto to do, and he did it. So, you know, I say don't be a sore loser, okay? And the ifs and the ands, that's just what they are. You know, what if it went past nine? But it did it. So there's really no point to talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it is what it is. What can we do?
I just think if it did go past nine, I mean, unless something drastically changed, you know, Cotto hits the wall physically and it just is dead in the water.
I didn't see that, though. I saw a guy.
Yeah, I didn't see that happening. That's what I'm saying. Unless that happened.
Hey, can we all agree that can we all agree that Margarito has a chin of legends? Like,
dude.
Seriously.
Yeah.
That guy was taking some bombs this time around, and nothing fazing, man. And I was like, what the hell is this guy made of?
I didn't think he was taking
so
much
shots from a genetic Manny Pacquiao.
You know?
He barely buckled a couple times against Manny Pacquiao. I think once that I recall clearly. Yeah, he's got a hell of a chin. I don't think Cotto's that big of a puncher, but still, to take that many on the chin and not go down. You know, what does that say about Shane Moses when he fought Margarito? You know, I think it was not a prepared Margarito the way he was for these last two fights.
Exactly. I was going to say
not
that.
At all. Not at all. But still, you know, Shane was able to just get him out of there. I don't know. You know, I think the one thing I feel coming out of the fight is I hope he retires. I don't think he needs to take any more damage. He made some really good paydays the last couple fights. There's no reason.
Well, he's
going to
be fighting against that eye, too. You know what I mean? And we saw what happened with David Reed. You know, the eye just really honestly became a problem. Don't want to see that happen in Margarito. Just, you know, he had a good payday, a couple good paydays, like you mentioned. Let's see him just kind of retire out of the sport. Junior, hey, thanks, brother, for calling in. I'm going to put you on hold because we're going to patch in some other callers, okay?
All right, thanks for taking my call, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Take it easy,
man. And yeah, man, I agree with you. I think it's time for him to say enough's enough. Let's get in another fight fan before we get our first guest on with us. Really quick, let's get CT. He wants to talk Cotto, Margarito, and Khan versus Peterson. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. I think Cotto boxed very well. I also want to think if Nassim Richardson maybe, you know, might have given him a little bit of pointers, you know, behind the scenes. You know, he used his right hand very well. He clinched. He actually pushed Margarito back a little bit. And he also stayed off the ropes. So, I mean, he came in with a very good game plan. Like you guys are saying about Margarito's eye, I don't think it will ever be the same. I think you should probably call it quits because that eye is looking to get damaged almost every time, no matter who he fights. I would like to see Cotto. I would also like to see Cotto fight Alvarez. I think it will be a pretty good money fight, you know what I mean? And style-wise, I think it's a pretty good matchup.
I think so, too.
That's a hell of a fight, you know, and it's a winnable fight for both guys. You know, Cotto is kind of a fragile guy. He does get marked up. He certainly can't stand and trade with somebody that's really big and strong, you know, because Alvarez is going to be a 160. I don't think he can get down from where he's at just with his musculature. I think that it's Mexico versus Puerto Rico. You could do that fight. You know, that's the thing. Where do you do it? Do you do it in Mexico or do you do it in Madison Square Garden?
Well, the thing is, they both sell out. You know what I mean? They both sell out.
Both sell
I think that's going to be the tug of war of who's going to get what. You know, I don't know. Interesting. I would. You know, if I was Canelo's people, I'd be like, you know, let's just do whatever they want. Let's just make this fight happen because it's a sellable fight and it's also it's a toss up. I mean. Can Cotto do the dancing around the ring against a guy that has quicker feet? You know, a guy that's going to not really chase him. You know, I don't see Canelo really chasing him because we've seen the smaller guys really chase down Canelo. And also a guy that's going to throw straight punches where Margarito needs you in front of him to throw some looping shots, body shots, uppercuts, where Canelo's more out of a distance. He doesn't do fairly well up close. He needs distance to land his big right. So it's a very interesting, intriguing fight.
Yeah, I also thought that Saturday night, I thought that Cotto was going to go to the body a little bit more, but, you know, he had something in front of him that he knew he had to take care of that right eye. So I think he was going for the eye a lot more than he should have. But who knows? He could have mixed it up a little bit more.
I thought he neglected the body just because of the fact that he knew when you go to the body, you got to sit there a little longer to land the body shots, you know? And I thought he was like, you know what? Not going to do that. I'm going to keep moving. It's working for me. And if I don't know if I remember correct, I think Pedro Diaz told him in the corner not to try to go to that body. Just keep moving and moving. It was working.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it'll be up to big shots when you go to the body. And I think he was smart just to say, you know, I'm getting what I got and just take what Margarito's giving me, and he's giving me his face, like, all night long. So just take it, you know. It was really smart. I mean, a lot of people were complaining about that, saying that, you know, the idea that he needed to do more, or he needed to really put it on him or go to the body. And to me, it's just about winning. And I think any fighter would agree with me. Whatever's working on the night, that's what's going to work tonight. You know, and
about the Khan and Peterson fight this weekend, I think it's going to be pretty interesting just because, you know, Peterson can make adjustments in the ring pretty well. I think it's going to be a tougher fight than what people seem to say that I've talked to. I think Khan has the speed advantage. When it comes to, like, a tough, grueling fight, I think, you know, if Peterson makes it a dog fight, I think he can have the advantage in that type of way because Khan hasn't been doing too well when people come inside. He's not a very good inside fighter to me. And I think Peterson should, you know, try to counter him with that right hand, try to get inside to the body, and maybe throw some uppercuts against Khan. Try to time him.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. You know, I think it's an interesting fight just because Peterson, he's a guy that kind of waits. You know, he hits on that little kind of shield defense, like Arthur Abraham almost, and he kind of comes to you naked without the jab. And he kind of waits for you to throw, and then he'll go after that, after he blocks. And against Khan, he could be just chasing him around all night doing that. Khan's going to use his angles. He's going to use his speed. He's probably going to try that left hook to the body just to test you out. And if it doesn't make you go away, but he can get away with it, he'll just keep doing that until it does eventually break you down. Peterson's got to start faster. He's got to be more in charge. He usually lets his hands go, like, in the back end of the fight. He starts to throw the right hand and let things go. And he did that with Kyo, and he also did that with Ortiz. He's got to be that guy early on, I think, and kind of rattle Amir Khan and get him into a cat-and-mouse situation, but where Khan's on the back foot throwing defensive punches as opposed to coming downhill or darting all around you and putting leverage on his shots. I think it's going to be a very good fight. And you
I think so, too.
Now that Peterson's at home, so he's going to be inspired. This is his shot to win two titles. It's probably his last shot to be in a position like this. It's going to be a good fight.
I think so, too. You know, the thing, too, with Peterson, what we've seen recent of him, he's kind of really shied away from his old style, which was be the counterpuncher, be elusive. He's more or less has kind of trended his way of trying to be more of an exciting fighter, and I think that's failed for him. To me, with Khan, it's being the much bigger guy, lankier guy. Peterson has definitely got to be the smarter guy. He's kind of have to really sit back a little bit and do exactly what he used to do before, but a little bit more at it with the special effects. The one thing about what Peterson could land is an uppercut, and I think a lot of people are undermining what Peterson can do in the inside. I think he should really wait for Khan to come to him rather than trying to chase him down, what he tried to do with Timothy Bradley. I think that's a real bad game plan if that's what they're going to do. Barry Hunter has said it numerous times, even on Leaving in the Ring, is that he's yelled at him, he's argued with them about that style, but the kid's been stubborn. You know, this time around, I think Peterson, like you said here, Gabriel, having the, getting a little bit added spirit because it's in his hometown, etc., but don't let it get too caught up. He's got to be really focused with Khan. I think it's going to be an exciting fight. I like to see Peterson jab to the stomach, to the midsection, so that he can possibly land a big right, a big right on a Khan. I don't know whether or not he could stop him, but I think he could do enough damage where you could see Khan overwork himself and get tired out, where it could be a possible stoppage for Lamont.
Yeah, I also think, you know, just do something to throw off Khan's rhythm because, you know, he comes in with a pretty good rhythm. And once you know how to try to offset some of his combinations and the way he throws punches, I think he'll get a little bit discouraged if he could, you know what I mean?
That a jab to the stomach, a jab to the chest will always knock somebody's rhythm. You know what I mean? If you got a fast guy, so many people always say, well, how do you stop a guy with speed? A jab. A good jab always stops a guy because it makes him – you know what happens with speed, guys with speed – is that if you got a jab that just keeps ramming repeatedly in your face, they need that spot. So then that what that tends to do, it makes them stay at one spot. We've seen this numerous times with guys that like Zab Judah. If you stick something good, what happens is Zab, he ends up getting stuck in the mud. He doesn't know what to do because he's looking for that one spot where he could dart in. Same thing with Khan. Jab to his chest, jab to his stomach, make him basically stick in one spot. It's not going to happen the first, second, third round. Peterson's going to have to be really disciplined, and hopefully they really worked the jab enough so that that game plan can be put into the arsenal, because I think that's the only way he could possibly beat Amir Khan is with a jab and a stiff, strong jab.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But anyway, CT, brother, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you on hold because I think we're going to have our next guest call in right now, brother.
All right, thank you. Well, I'm going to disappear and
go right ahead.
Give him a call. I'll be right back.
Go ahead and disappear. I heard that's a common on dates for you. Disappear, my friend. 347-215-7598. Call us here on Leaving in the Ring. Let's talk some boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving in the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. But you got to go through Mr. David Chan in order to get patched in here. Hey, if you haven't had a chance to pick up our Undisputed magazine with the cover, front cover, is with Andre Ward. Had a chance to interview Andre Ward, hear about what he had to say about his upcoming fight with Froch. We did interview on an audio interview between me and Gabriel with Ward a little earlier about 4:45. So we're going to be doing that replay next week. Froch 2 is also on Undisputed. It talks about Andre Ward's religion and how he feels that it's ignorant to be called the son of God. So there's a lot of good stuff, man. You get to talk. You get to see what Pedro Diaz had to say before the Cotto fight. You get to see what Margarito had to say about the Cotto before the Cotto fight. Anyways, we're back with our next guest and with Mr. Gabriel Montoya.
I'm here with Carlos Molina, who's a light welterweight contender with the Golden Boy. He's had a big win this last weekend over Manuel Leyva. I guess I'm saying that right. Welcome to the show, Carlos. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me here.
Our pleasure, man. Congratulations on your win. I thought it was one of your more complete performances. Your defense was nice and tight. I liked the way you were really sharp on the inside with your shots and economical. How'd you feel in the fight?
I felt good. You know, going into this fight, we had a great camp. We're in there for over 2 months, you know, in the gym, you know, we're in there focused and we knew we were fighting for a while. So we were sparring a lot of southpaws going in there, I felt good. And especially fighting, you know, right here close to home. I felt like I had to look sharp and perform.
He brought a lot of people with him too. I was surprised. It was a pretty, even crowd, people cheering for you, people cheering for him. And they were pretty vocal. Did that affect you at all in the fight? Did you hear that, or do you even hear anything when you're fighting?
I hear the crowd. I hear the cheers, when I would hit them, I would hear people like scream and stuff, and you know that pumps me up. You know, it's just more fuel to the fire. But the clear thing is mainly the corner that you hear.
Do you even see anybody like ringside, or because your brother was right there cheering you on, all your buddies? Are you able to hear any of that, or is it at this point as a pro, have you kind of just zeroed in and you're just on the opponent?
It's kind of weird because I don't know. I guess it's like selective hearing because you just hear like the instructions from your corner. That's mainly like the only things that I hear when I'm fighting.
Really. And the ref too, I imagine. You can be aware of him.
Yeah.
Is that different?
Yeah,
now?
You hear the ref, you know. But like I said, just mainly the instructions, because you're so focused and you're focused on the fight, and then you're listening. You're so used to hearing that voice in the corner, you know, throughout your whole training camp. So I guess it kind of combines in the fight.
Who's your trainer? Has this been your trainer the whole time?
Yeah, it's Clemente Medina.
Oh, okay. You've been with him as an amateur or just as a pro?
As a pro. I've been with them for 4 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense now, seeing the way you fight. You kind of low to the ground and economical. Did you like
your performance? Did you feel like you did okay?
I think I did good, but I know I could do a whole lot better than what I did. I think I could throw a lot more punches than what I did, and you know, I think I could have finished them off if I would have placed my punches a little better. But you know, it's something you learn from every fight, and I'm planning on taking that to the gym and working on that, and you know, look even better the next time I'm fighting again.
Now, what's the plan at this point? Are you guys going to fight again this year, or are you going to wait for, like, January and just come back strong at the top of the year?
I think that's the plan. January, February, to come back strong and stay busy throughout 2012. 2011 was a pretty tough year for me. This was only my second fight. Due to, different types of stuff. I had an injury and then I'm sick and just, no, it just wasn't a good year, but, you know, we ended the year on a good note, so we're ready to start it off for 2012.
How frustrating was that during that period? Because you fought in August, and then you hadn't fought all year, and then it took till August to get a fight, and then you're barely fighting in December. I mean, was there a frustration period there? Were you
doubting the sport? Yeah, it was extremely, extremely frustrating. Like, it was, you know, I'm just glad it's over. I think my kids and my girl were tired of seeing me at home because I was always mad. But now you know when they see that I'm training and you know because I need boxing in my life. Boxing is like my second wife over here. But you know without boxing I'm not happy. So I wasn't able. There was time I had a cast on, so I wasn't able to do anything. I think I know what depression felt like. I think I was depressed for like 6 weeks.
Oh, so you couldn't box at all. You were just stuck with this cast on your hand.
I mean, I had a cast on, and then you know you don't really want to do too much stuff with the cast on, and then your hand gets all smelly. But I would try to run, and then my hand would like swell up. So, after I would go for a run, like 20 minutes, I'd have to have my hand up in the air so all the blood could start flowing again. But yeah, it was tough.
Wow.
And on top of that, you're probably wondering, you know, when this cast comes off, is my hand going to be the same? Am I going to feel okay?
Yeah, you still got to do that therapy, and then it's just something that no boxer wants to go through.
How long?
But thank God, thank God everything. Like my hands are 100% now. They're good. So thank God for that.
How long was that whole process?
Oh man, it was. I think with my hand, I think it was a total of like four to five months with just my hand for it to actually be healed. And then I was getting ready to fight, and then I got like 2-3 weeks before the actual fight, I got like really sick where I couldn't even get out of the bed. So I talked to my manager, who's Frank Espinoza, and he told me, you know what, there's no point, to take this fight when you're not going to be at 100%, so we had to cancel that, and I didn't end up fighting until August. And
that's brutal. Did you? How'd you feel in terms of weight at this point? I mean, you fight, somewhere in the high 130s. Sometimes this year you fought at 143, 137. Do you want to settle in at lightweight or?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, that one fight where I was at 143. I should never do that, man. That's not me. And I think my performance showed that night.
Yeah.
I think I need to be, at lightweight. That's the weight where I think I'll be a complete fighter at that weight.
What do you think is the plan in terms of, and the Espinozas are as good as anybody at developing a fighter, and Golden Boy is doing a great job with you, fighting you often. Besides this year. Is the plan to move from prospect to contender next year?
That's the plan. That's the plan. I want to be up there. When they say, this guy's a contender, he's ready for a world title shot. Hopefully by the end of next year, I'll be one of the names that they'll be mentioning.
Well, I wish you the best, man. I was really excited seeing your fight, and hopefully Ernie will get you a new outfit for the next time out, and you'll be ready. Now, those people that are listening, this is Carlos Molina, not the guy fighting James Kirkland. So
So I was going to ask.
No, it's not. yeah, we got to.
Hey, Carlos,
yeah, I get a lot of that too. Oh, you fought Chavez Jr. I thought you won. I just said, yeah.
That's true. You get some run off of him. Would you fight James Kirkland if they offered that to you?
I'll fight anybody.
That's a true warrior right there.
Cool, man. I'm happy that you came on the show, and I'm really happy for your success. That you're doing well. I wish you the best, and you have a great holiday.
Oh, thank you. And you guys too, man. Thanks for having me here. You know, I enjoy all the love you guys give me, and you know, happy holidays to you guys.
You too, there, Carlos. Have a good one, brother.
Thank you.
Bye, man. Take care.
Well, there you go, Carlos Molina Jr. on Leaving the Ring, talking about what happened for his fight that was on the undercard of Joseph Arbeco and Adner Morris. We haven't even got into talking about that fight. That was an excellent fight. But before we even do that, let's pass in some other fight fans who want to talk boxing here on Leaving in the Ring. We're going to go down the line. Let's get up. Oh, man, let me see if this is – let me see who this is here. I believe we got Jesse Vargas. Do we have Jesse Vargas, the fighter, on here with us?
Yeah, hey, what's up, Gabe? How you guys doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
Pretty relaxing at home right now.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So what's new with you, brother? I mean, we saw a great fight that you had a couple months back with Josecito Lopez, and man, that was a great, great matchup. So what's on the plan? What's on the agenda for you next?
Well, we're actually negotiating now a fight in February, sometime around mid-February. So we hope that one comes through. And you know, we've just been staying at the gym. You know, I'm still in shape, you know, still not in fighting shape, you know, but you know, we'd like to stay in shape. You know, I'm not too fat right now, so I'm doing all right. Just waiting. just waiting on, you know, on the date to confirm it on mid-February.
Now, when you're saying wait on the date to confirm, but confirm with who? Who's the plan of action of fighting in the ring with?
Well, first, I think we're looking for an event, for a venue. You know, I think it's going to be a busy month in February. I think Victor Ortiz might be having his rematch with Andre Berto. So, I mean, that's a nice card. We have Maidana and Alexander trying to make that fight. So, I mean, there's a couple shows that we could get on. We're moving up to 147 pounds. We're not fighting at 140.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
It's my first time actually stating that on, you know, with anyone, actually.
And
moving up to 147, it was just too hard. It was too difficult to make 140.
Yeah, you're a big 140. I always kind of looked at you as a welterweight waiting to happen. So, did it happen a little sooner for you, you think, than you had planned?
You know what? The thing with me is that I wanted to become world champion at 140. So, and right after I would become world champion, I would go up to 147, but I just can't do it. I prefer to give a great performance, a spectacular performance in a different weight class, then try to suck down to 140 and possibly not show off my actual because of the weight. So
feel,
I'm not going to take any chances.
Like
I'm going up
to did you feel like that? Sorry to interrupt you. Like that in your last fight? I mean, because I noticed early on, I've watched you since pretty early on in your career, you used to sit on your punches a little bit more. You would move, but you would sit down a little more and be able to give a little more in the combination department. Did you feel a little taxed in your last fight?
I really don't want to make any excuses, but 2 weeks before the fight, I had tremendous speed. I felt good in the fight. I really did, but I did feel my power diminishing 2 weeks before the fight, you know. My sparring partners, I would catch them with some clean shots, and they would get hurt a month before the fight, a month and a half before the fight, 6 weeks before the fight. And as soon as it was fight time, it was getting closer to fight time, come 2 weeks, a week and a half, I was hitting them with the same combinations, and they were just taking it and coming at me. So I did feel the difference, but I didn't want to psych myself out. I just said, no, I'm okay. You know, I'm still strong. And I stayed with that. And I think it did show in the fight. I mean, I would hit them with shots. One of the two. I was hitting them with shots that normally I would hurt someone, you know what I mean? And he just took them. Or he just had a hard chin. Yeah, I mean, you have to give credit to Josecito. He does have a hard chin. He takes a good punch.
Yeah, he does.
But I did feel a difference, and that's the reason why I'm moving to 147. I feel stronger when I'm heavier. You know, I was very fast. I was very, very fast, extremely fast, but the power wasn't there. The snap wasn't there. And I think the fans also saw that. My fans have been following me.
I think you moved a little more, too, particularly late in the fight. You had to just kind of stick and move rather than kind of dig in. And we were talking about it earlier about Mike Jones, who's at 147, and he's kind of fighting in the same – having to fight in the same way, I think, because he's killing himself to make that weight. Cause he's like, you know, for 147.
Yeah, I mean, I think when a fighter doesn't have the strength that he's used to, or for some reason, you know, the fight's not going his way, he has to look for other alternatives. And I think that's what makes a great fighter. He has to look for, he has to have different styles. You know, I love to fight, but in that fight, I thought it would have a better outcome if I would just box. I think I had better boxing skills than Jose Lopez. And like you said, Jones, I think he had to make it easier on himself and box because maybe he didn't have the strength that he used to having.
Yeah, I think it's. Did you find that out early on in the fight that you know what, this guy, either he's got a good chin, or you know I'm just, my power is just not there. I'm gonna shift it up. At what point did you realize that?
The first thing that I saw in the fight was that just, you know, he took a punch, and you know my power. I mean, I did stop him a couple of times with some nice crisp jabs, and I mean he was feeling the punch, but nothing to really, you know, for me to put pressure onto him. You know, he'd stop him on his tracks for a second or two, but then he'd come right back. So I figured that he was just had a hard chin, and I just had to box him. You know, I mean, in the fight, you don't think that you don't have the power that you usually have. You just think, all right, well, he's taking the punches. All right, let's move around. You know, you think around that. But, I mean, I take nothing away from him. He's a good fighter, and then that's his type of fight. He's a pressured fighter.
Yeah, he is, you know. And I thought that's what he did that night. I thought he was going to do off the bat was to come forward and kind of trap you. And, you know, I was really surprised in how well you were able to move. You know, I think that was the one thing that I was really kind of thrown back with was when the movement that you keep continually doing in that fight. But
and that,
you know,
jab, too.
That jab, yeah, nice. The jab, too. You know, I mean, and, you know, with some of the punches, I thought, too, that I wasn't sure if there was something wrong with you. I was thinking to myself, but I saw a lot of moonshining in there, and then you'd move out of there. But I just figured that was just part of the game plan because of the pressure that Josecito was putting on so much, you know. And but now you're telling us that, you know, you just didn't feel that you had your power in that fight.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, I think you know, most fans could see the difference that, I mean, there wasn't really much power there. I mean, what I'm used to having. You know,
So let me ask you this. So are your feelings about that fight up in the air the way a lot of fight fans kind of felt about the decision? And, you know, I mean, I thought it was the right call, but there were so many other folks that didn't. They believed that Lopez won that fight, but I had you edging it out a little.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has their own opinion. I think that I won the fight. I'm not saying I clearly won the fight because we had some close rounds. We did have some close rounds, but I think that I pulled it out. You know, I was boxing, I was throwing the most punches and landing the most punches. But everyone has their own opinion. I mean,
right?
I'll be honest with you, Jesse. I felt that Josecito won the fight. I judged more like on the harder punches, but at the same time, when I was there at the fight, I could see the other way. You know, and even talking to Henry Ramirez, who was on our show, he didn't feel that they won. And Josecito didn't feel like he did enough to take it from you. So it's one of those fights, and a lot of times boxing is kind of like art, and that it depends on how you look at it, you know, and that's how it played out. It was a good fight, though, man. It doesn't really matter one way or the other. I think, I imagine you learned a lot. Would you agree?
Yes, I did. I learned a lot, and I also agree that it was a good fight.
Yes, I did, Mr. Gabriel Montoya.
Yeah, I mean, fights like that can only be, I think.
Yeah,
I really did learn a lot
from this fight, you know, and I also, you know, I got a little tired, got a little gassed out in the middle round, which, I mean, it's all a learning experience. You know, it's things that, you know, happen in the fight, and certain things that I didn't like or I think I could do better, And you just go back into the gym and then you work on it. I mean, that's what comes with being a young fighter. You learn from every experience. And I'm not the type that says, oh, I know everything. No, I mean, there's much more to learn, and I'm trying to be the best that I can be at my I'm trying to learn the most and be the best.
I imagine that teaches you a lot about relaxation, how to keep your head calm when you're
right.
tired and the fight's still on the line and late. It's all part of that, just becoming a better fighter. And I imagine you'd agree, you get more out of this than you do knocking some guy out in the first round.
Yeah, you do. You do learn a lot more. Especially me being a young fighter, I think that putting those rounds, even just going to 10 rounds was a big experience for me because I've never been 10 rounds. This is my first time. So
right.
I've learned. There's plenty of things I learned from the fight.
So with learning off this fight, and like you said, mentioning going 10 rounds, meaning, you know, and that was an added thing there for your career. Are you still gung-ho of trying to face some of the bigger fights out there, knowing what you know now, which is you might need a slower pace to build up to where you need to be?
I would talk to my promoter and see what options we have. I'm not scared to fight anyone, to tell you the truth. I'll fight anyone, and I think no matter who I fight, I always dig down deep and do what I have to do, you know, and I would always give a great fight. But I would have to talk with my promoter and see what options they want to take or what options there is out there. I think this next fight is just to feel the 147 pounds for the first time. And
sure.
From there, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm really I'd love to see how you're going to look at 147. Even Doug Fisher from Ring, who's he just tweeted out right now saying, he thinks you're a welcome to the welterweight division. And I agree with him, man. I'm really curious
yeah.
to seeing what happens at 147 with you. I think too, because the welterweight division is starting to thin out, and it does need new fresh faces. And we see a lot of the 140 guys out there saying, you know, we're going to leave this division to jump up. And these are the glory divisions too, man. I mean, you know, like the 130s to 140s and these mid divisions, it's great to establish yourself there. But I think when you're a fighter and you get into boxing, you'll want to be something special in the glory divisions, you know, where the ones that matter. Because people that really don't even watch this sport, they're always going to remember, like, oh, so you're a welterweight. Oh, you're a middleweight. They're not going to say, oh, you're a junior middleweight. You know what I mean? So
yeah, right.
I think it's
bottom
a great
line. Welterweight, heavyweight, middleweight.
Right.
That's right. That's the one. That's the most common ones out there.
Bottom
yep.
line
okay.
is welterweight champion of the world sounds sexier than junior welterweight champion of the
yep.
world.
Yep, definitely.
It does. Thank you.
Well, Jesse,
let me tell you a little bit of the name game just before we let you go. Kell Brook, Devin Alexander, who's out of 147. What do you think of those fights? I think they'd be fun and good matchups for you.
I think the same. I think they would be interesting fights. And, you know, I'm sure they'll happen. I'm sure they'll happen sometime soon. You know, you have a lot. You have Maidana going up to 147. You have Alexander. What does he have? Khan's trying to go up to 147 after this fight. So there's plenty of names out there going up to 147. So I feel that I'm in the right weight division. There's a lot of competition. There will be a lot of competition. And,
yep.
You know, I'm just trying to be one of the best at 147.
It's better to get there now and establish yourself a little bit and get used to the weight and then wait for these guys to show up. It's man, we were just talking about how the divisions are changing, and here we go.
Yep, exactly. Well, Jesse, thank you again, brother, for calling in. And keep us updated, man. It's always fun when you just pop up. We love it.
Thank you for having me, and I want to give a quick shout-out to I heard Carlos Molina on the line earlier. Want to congratulate him on his win. Abner Mares on his win, on his great, you know, great performance. I think he fought a great fight. And,
yeah,
of course, thanks for having me, guys.
Are you on Twitter?
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Jesse, are you on Twitter or no?
Yeah, I'm Twitter. I'm Vargas Jesse.
Vargas Jesse, okay. We'll follow you
yeah.
on there, brother.
All right, thank you.
Man.
Okay, you
take care, man.
All right, nice talking to you guys.
You too. There you go, man. It's always fun, you know, when we just get a surprise from a fighter that calls in and wants to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. Jesse Vargas, who had a great fight with Josecito Lopez, it was back and forth, and now he's leaving the 140 division to go to 147, which I always say it's a good idea if you can't make the weight, you know, when he's talking about the punching power. And now that it just makes a lot more sense of what we saw on their fight on Saturday night, which was on, a couple months back. So wish Jesse Vargas all the best, man. Can't wait to see who the next opponent is and how he looks at 147. Let's back into some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring that still want to talk Cotto and Margarito, and they want to talk Khan and Peterson here on Leaving the Ring. So let's patch in John, who's been waiting patiently. What's up, John? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's up? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Doing very well. First of all, I want to say I think Cotto fought a good fight, not a great fight. And number two, about the hand wrap thing, I think HBO is making it into something it's not. It's, you know, this is not a Louis Resto and Panama Lewis situation. You
yeah,
know?
You're right.
Yeah, you know, that's what they're trying to make it seem like, you know. It's not a Louis Resto and Panama Lewis situation, you know.
I've always found it interesting that Bob was the promoter of record for Billy Collins.
Right.
And that he's the guy that's probably more than anybody vehemently defending Antonio Margarito. And I remember asking him about that, like, you know, should we look at that as a gauge of how you feel, you know, and how about the situation and the facts of the case? And he said, absolutely. You know, I was there. I promoted Billy Collins. I was involved in all that stuff that went on, you know, not directly, you know, but,
right.
but involved in the case and all that stuff. He had to live through that and talk to those families and talk to Billy Collins' family and his loved ones. I don't think for a second that Bob would, if he thought Margarito was cheating and was guilty of it and knew it and was doing this for years on his cards, I have to question whether Bob would have gone forward. I don't think he would have.
Yeah, true. True, definitely. I think we lost, John. So let's patch in. Yeah, I think we lost.
There's another story going on right now. This broke earlier, I guess yesterday or today, a Mexican newspaper broke that Tomas Rojas admitted off the record that he threw the fight with Jorge Arce back in 2007. This happened at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. It was a top-ranked show, and I guess Rojas was offered, I'm not sure how much money, to throw the fight, and he did it. He never got paid, apparently, but he said it off record, and the reporter printed it anyways. Rojas denied it. And then he recanted the denial and said, no, in fact, I did throw the fight. You kind of do – that's a top-ranked card, man. And they've been involved in fixing fights before. They at least had an FBI investigation. There was convictions off of that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very interesting case. I'm curious to see how the media picks up on it, those that have access to top rank and all the players. I mean, this could have been more of a Zanfer Promotions thing. With Ricardo Beltran, because he, I believe, handles Jorge Arce. Most of the Mexican champions at top rank.
Yeah, he does handle. Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting situation. I don't know.
No, we always go back into is the you go to the cigar room. I'm going to call it that because the smoke is always up. you get fight fans that go, you know, do you think this still happens? Do you think that fighters do take a dive and you got to sit there and say, yeah, you know, I said this a long time ago and I did, you know, got a little bit of a response from certain people in the business that were kind of upset when I said that a lot of ways there's promoters and managers. It's the modern day mafia, the way they move, you know, they just change their names around a little bit so that you don't identify them the way they make negotiations. You know, Teamsters in so many ways. So it's just not surprising. I'm not surprised. Our sport has so many dark corners that sometimes we're almost in a box. You know, that ring, it has a closure in it, and not the ropes. Take out the ropes, you put a box over it, there it is. That's the boxing business, unfortunately, you know. Let's patch in some other fight fans before we get our next guest on the line. He's going to be calling in a few more minutes. Let's get Jay, who wants to talk Cotto, Amerikan, and more here on Leave It in the Ring. What's up, Jay? You're live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I just want to talk a little bit about the Cotto fight and Margarito and, you know, about Amir Khan and Peterson fighting this weekend. You know, Cotto fought a good fight, you know. And, you know, the thing that struck me was, you know, they made a big deal about, you know, Cotto, you know, with his new trainer and the movement and the combination punching and wrapping up Margarito and stopping his forward momentum, you know. And I think everybody should look at this as a great example of, you know, the art of defense is lost in boxing these days, you know. And, you know, a guy like Margarito, he's a one-dimensional guy, and he's like a freight train. And if
right.
you don't stop down the progression of a freight train, he's going to keep coming. So I don't think it was a much different fight than last time. You know, Margarito was a little bit fresher. But I think that, you know, I don't understand how after all these championships Miguel Cotto's won and all these, you know, accolades he's received, that he hasn't learned this before. And it's funny to watch it go down because you're watching him do it, and it's almost amateurish. You know, he's finally learning how to grab somebody and muscle them around, you know. These guys these days, man, would not last with the fighters of the 60s and 70s and even a lot of guys in the 80s. Could you imagine Miguel Cotto with a Roberto Duran? I mean, could you imagine Amir Khan with a Roberto Duran or Tommy Hearns? I mean, Amir Khan is the most overrated guy there is out there. Everybody's built on television now. This guy, Amir Khan, he has no defense but to run. You know,
right.
as soon as he gets in with a fighter with my Dana's power and knows how to actually cut off the ring and make it a small circle, the guy's gonna get completely annihilated. He doesn't, you know, he's a very good sharp boxer and he's good for television and he's flashy. But I feel like people need to fight fans if they're new. They need to realize that defense is a lost art. And guys, you know, that Cotto's a very good technical fighter and a very good, you know, offensive fighter. And I think what he showed was, you know, what can be done to a guy like Margarito. I take another guy, for instance, Brandon Rios. You know, this guy, Brandon Rios, same thing. There's no plan B with these guys. As soon as that guy runs into a good boxer that can move, is not going to stand in front of him and got some good pop, that guy's going to go down too. You know, I think that, you know, a lot's being made about, you know, Amir Khan being pound for pound, but I think that doesn't sound good for pound for pound.
Well, I just look, a lot of these stars, quote unquote, that are really have to look forward to for the next 10 years, and I think Amir certainly wants to fight everybody, but at the same time, his style is not very exciting. And you're right, they're all missing the little subtleties that the old veterans used to have, the old time fighters used to have, how to maul a guy inside. How to subtly headbutt a guy or hit him on the hip, all the things that Bernard Hopkins still does. Those things are missing, and maybe it's because the trainers are getting younger. They're not really old, that old school of fight guys. I'm not really sure what it is.
I think a lot of the stuff that we used to see back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s have died with the old trainers, you know, the trainers that have passed on, you know, because you're absolutely right. There's a lot of things that we don't see that's being used back in the past, you know, the jab, for instance. You know, a lot of these guys don't have an educated jab. You know, they don't use the jab effectively the way it used to be used before. Rolling the shoulder, you know, getting in the inside and working the body and showing us just different mirrors of their style. So much has gone away from boxing, and I think it just goes with the times. Everybody, and I talked about this earlier, was it seems to me a lot of fighters are more in tune of becoming a star rather than working to be that bright star. They rather have that 15 minute of fame with some money rather than working for it. You know, a prime example is Robert the Ghost Guerrero's manager on, you know, when they're saying, you know, the time is now, and we were basically giving it to them, like saying, yeah, but you haven't made an impact yet or built yourself up to make you viable of fight fans saying, yeah, we definitely want to see this, you know, it's just the window is open, So let's break into the house and steal everything that we can. That's what's lacking with boxing. You know, these promoters are trying to push everything as fast as they can in our face rather than building what they should build. You know, I mean, refreshing. I'm going to tell you something here. When you talked about Cotto and the defense, it's something that's a lost art, a lost skill. Thank God for Moreno when he fought Vic Darchinian. There was a lost art right there that we saw. Him, you know, stepping back, doing his shots, going under the punches, turning at an angle, pivoting, and then landing the shot and using his jab to really keep Vic at a distance, an arm length distance where he could still counter and not run. There's a lot of things that that our sport needs back, you know. It needs a lot of things. And the reason too, this is the big plus that we've had Virgil Hunter here on us, is there's too many guys out there that claim to be trainers, and they're not trainers. We need to learn how to regulate them. We need to learn how to kind of put them through the mill to find out, are these guys suitable? You had the Marines have a program. This kid named Jimenez, who was on our November issue, and the kid died because of a coach that has no sense, doesn't know what to look for.
I agree. I think there's some people here, especially in the amateur ranks, that have no business putting somebody in harm's way. And that's another problem, because gyms are so spread out and so rampant, and boxing and MMA is everywhere. And I think this pure boxing, you know, the art has been lost, man. I look at them talk about guys like Amir Khan, and then I just click back onto my viewfinder, my top videos. One of the top ones is Roberto Duran versus Davey Moore. I mean, and when you watch like Roberto Duran versus Esteban De Jesus, I mean, how could these guys be even mentioned in that kind of a weight, in that kind of a class with these guys? You know, when I talk about defense, I don't just talk about like the grabbing. I'm talking to guys who know how to ride the punches, who can break somebody down mentally by making them know. Maybe the crowd doesn't know, but making the guy know that he cannot hurt him. You know, a guy like Duran, I see that in some young guys. Yeah, I'm down here. I'm kind of close between Tijuana and San Diego, and I see some boxing right here in this area. And there are some good kids down in this area that we watch, but I'd love for them to get more exposure. There's a really good Mexican kid down here too, Antonio Orozco, I think his name is down in San Diego. Very good technical kid, there's a Filipino kid down here too that's doing a lot. I think he's a 135 pounder, and I go and I watch these kids, and some of these guys are showing those moves, you know, and they show these moves, and I like it when I see guys like this, like the Filipino, I can't remember his name, but the southpaw, he moves really.
Oh,
really,
Marcito.
You know,
talking about Marcito.
Marcito Gesta. Really smooth. I'm watching him like that here, and I see this kid, and I see the way that the head movements, and you know, I like seeing stuff like that with guys, old school stuff, you know. And, but I don't want to take no more of your guys' time, but I just wanted to let you guys know it's going to be good fights this weekend, and I just hope that, you know, the boxing keeps progressing, and but I want people to know that, you know, these guys, compared to the guys that we grew up watching in the 70s and 80s and the 60s, people should watch some old tapes and appreciate the good ones. So I thank you. I leave you guys with that. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much, Jay. You have a good one. You know, I absolutely agree. You know, I mean, that's the core of our sport. It starts off with the amateurs, but the trainers, you know, they need to up their knowledge. I've been at numerous gyms and amateur fights, and I sit there and I cringe in particular ways they're training their fighters. Even with professional trainers, you know, you sit back. You know, plenty of times I've spoken to kids and I've always told them, you know, that old saying, you know, practice makes perfect. That's not always necessarily true, because if you're doing it wrong, then you're always going to be doing it wrong. You know, you got to find out, you know, I mean, I've seen kids wail at heavy bags, and you got to stop them and go, hey, that's not what it's there for. You know, you got to learn how to dance with it. You got to learn how to pivot. You got to learn how to work around the bag. Same thing with the double end bag, you know. And nowadays you see gyms that are just trying to crowd in kids, You know, so they got the bags literally a foot away from each other, where these kids can't have movement. So it teaches them just to stand in front of the guy and just wail away, rather than having grace, rather than showing them how to really work and how to step in and out and dance with a heavy bag or a speed bag. So many things that are missing in our sport. We need to get it back. But hey, what do I know? I'm just a boxing head, you know. Hey, let's pass in another fight fan here really quick. I wasn't sure if I saw the guy get flown off the balcony and stuff with the Mexican flag or anything like that. So obviously he didn't, because he's calling in. Rodrigo, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
Oh, hey, Phil. You know I'm like a cat. I always land on my feet. Come
on. I thought I heard, oh, no.
Oh, it was hostile. It was good, though. It was hostile. I got a question, because I've been seeing these rumors, or I don't know if they're already confirmed yet, about, you know, in my part of town, my side of the country over there, you know, Eric Morales versus Swift Garcia. What do y'all think of that matchup? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to think. You know, I know y'all watch more tape than I do.
We're hearing the same rumors, Gabe.
I haven't been able to confirm that one. I don't know if it is. I've been off the Twitter and a bit on the phone, but in other directions. I know the Carlos Molina Kirkland fight, at least from the Molina side, is a done deal this time.
Right.
I haven't heard from Kirkland's side yet, but I imagine it's all good. It's kind of the strategy that we all talked about.
That's a great matchup.
Yeah, I think Molina Kirkland is a hell of a matchup. They're doing it in Houston. From what I understand, so it's going to be, ton of fans out there. It's a safe fight for Kirkland, and that Molina doesn't hit very hard, but he's cagey, and so it's going to show that he can deal with a slick guy with some boxing skills. I'm picking Kirkland right out the gate. But the other fight, I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, we had the mandatory to Eric Morales on Jose Alusagun. You know, like 2 weeks ago, nobody's talking about him. I know he's not a money name, this and that. He looks like a style problem. And he's getting bypassed for Danny Swift, who, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't really done anything to deserve a title shot, has he? I mean, was that last fight, was that a mandatory shot? Obviously it's not, because Morales has a mandatory. So,
well, in terms of what he did with Kendall Holt, I mean – I think that's what leaves it. Does he, you know, did he do enough to intrigue us? I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking it's more or less he's a feed for Eric Morales, you know, because they saw that Swift was not really sitting on his punches. He was more or less trying to be elusive. And I think that works better for an Eric Morales, where he can probably have a little bit more success. But I don't know if that's a good matchup for Morales right now. I really haven't put a whole lot of thought into it. I don't know, man. Rob, what do you think, brother?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about Eric Morales. You know, he's one of the guys I've been watching for like almost a decade. You know, so I'm hoping he still has one last fight. And I woke everybody up with text messages and stuff saying, "Hey, we all got to go." And but I'm hoping it happens. You know, I'm hoping it's not just rumors. I'm seeing another rumor on y'all guys, Eloy Perez is up next for Adrian Broner.
So it would be pretty cool. Sam Garcia said it's almost close to closing, you know? Yeah, that deal.
And then there's already Berto Ortiz. It was looking like boxing's like picking up right where it left off in 2011. But yeah, I just wanted to get y'all's take on that, because, I mean, when I heard about it, I got real excited, because it's here in Texas and it's Eric Morales. But I'm like, he's like Danny Swift. He's young, you know what I mean? And
well, he's ranked number two in the WBC. You know, that's what's also weird about it, is that he's ranked number two. They just jumped right past the mandatory, who's more of a physical problem than Danny Garcia, and maybe a little more advanced as a boxer. And they went straight to Danny Garcia, who I think is still cooking. He might even be as good as he's ever going to be. I mean, he'll get more experienced, but in terms of speed and power, he is who he is. I mean, I think it's a tough fight for Eric Morales. You know, I think any fight is a tough fight for Eric Morales.
I was going to say that.
Even the Cano kid took him to the limit a little bit.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It's just weird. My problem with it is that the number one guy that deserves a shot
that fought and probably paid sanctioning fees for that
right.
shot isn't getting his shot. What's up with that? I thought Golden Boy was cleaning up boxing.
And
I want to hear all the guys that complain about in-house fights. This is an in-house fight. The only guy that's on this card in the main events that isn't with Golden Boy is Carlos Molina. He's with Warriors Boxing. And, of course, they're going to do this fight. You know, I don't blame him. It's probably a big payday, and if he wins, he's in line to fight Canelo. I don't know if the WBC mentioned it as such, but I mean, that's, to me, where Kirkland's position, having beat Alfredo Angulo, who was right there on the cusp. So.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me with these belts and sanctioning bodies. But, yeah, I mean, I felt, you know, I'm glad I just want to put my two cents in with Brandon Rios. I'm glad he pulled through and had a strong fight. I was really worried about him. I was sitting there in the hotel, and I was Robert Garcia just sits next to me. I'm like, oh, crap. So I just start chatting up with him. And then, I mean, I'm not trying to make fun of the guy or nothing, but I really didn't recognize him. I thought it was like an old man coming up to me or coming up in this direction. I mean, he had the jumpsuit on. That's why I knew
right.
it was Team Rios. So it's got to be his uncle or something. Because,
right,
I mean, he looked bad. I mean, he was walking slow. I mean, his face, he had these big glasses. He had his KC hat on, and it looked bad. That got me worried. That's when I started texting everybody. Said, hey, man, this might be a 50-50 fight now. I mean, but it was a gutty performance, you know. But yeah, I'm just glad he pulled through.
You know, I wasn't too worried because Brandon has been in that situation before, you know. And I knew that once he just kind of got in there, you know, was able to rehydrate himself, he was going to be fine. But my question is, how many times can you get away with that, you know? That's the thing that they have to kind of look at is that, okay, you were lucky this time. Your body didn't fail you, or your body didn't retaliate. So you can't continue just, you know, fighting at the edge. So that's my whole thing here. You know, I didn't think it was going to happen to him that Saturday night, but eventually down the line, if they're talking maybe two more fights or whatever the case they're kind of shouting out about, well, out of those two, to me, there's a gamble. I say don't gamble it. You got something good right now. Moving forward to 140 or 147, you know, there's plenty of great fights there at 140 to 147. So let's see him do that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I heard there was rumors already about him, Mike Alvarado going at it, you know, within Top Rank Stable. So I think it'll kind of be a good scrap. That's kind of throwing him in with a heavy hitter right away.
That's a brutal fight. That is just a brutal fight. I can't wait to see it. You know, that's one. I mean, I don't complain about the in-house fights because it's just like, you know, as long as the stables are good and the guys that are fighting each other are good, I'm all good with it, you know.
What
and
fight is this?
Alvarado versus Brent Rios.
Oh, yeah.
It's just pure mayhem. You know,
yep.
Two guys pounding on each other. I would like to see it in Southern California, you know, at the Home Depot. So I don't have to drive anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's just a perfect, perfect fight. You know, and then you think about, you know, if they kind of cross-promote Maidana versus Rios, although Maidana's talking 147 now.
Seven, right.
But, you know, then replace him with Matisse, and you've got a hell of a fight. Even more of a tougher challenge, I think, because Matisse can move a little bit, he can box a little bit, and he's definitely tough. And Rios, to me, moving up to 140, he gives up a little bit of his size advantage.
Right.
You know, before he was a bigger, stronger guy. I think he still kind of enjoys it a little bit at 140. But, you know, it's slowly starting to go away. It's going to be interesting to see all the other things that he has at his disposal as a boxer. You know, because he's
right.
going to have to set up some shots. But he's got that nice little sneaky jab that he throws to your chest. His uppercuts on the inside are just brutal. I think any fight that he takes is going to be fun. How about Brandon Rios versus Tim Bradley?
Oh, I'd love to see that fight, you know. Love to see that fight. I think that both guys coming forward, you're going to see a lot of action. God, I don't even know who would edge out on that one there. But, I mean, you definitely would have to look at Brandon being the bigger guy, stronger guy, where Bradley, too, is a strong, athletic fighter. And definitely can show us different angles of his boxing. What he has shown, you know, I know the caller earlier, Jay, was talking about how some stuff have disappeared from boxing. But Timothy, he's maybe one of the last that's been able to show us different sides of his boxing skills. So, yeah, definitely a great matchup there. Hey, Rob, brother, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold. We're going to patch in another fight fan, brother.
All right, thanks a lot, y'all. Have a good night.
No problem. Talking about amateurs in the lost art of fighters and stuff, Jose Ramirez is going to be calling in a little later here on the show. This kid here, man, I got to see him a little bit on YouTube or whatever I can get a hold of. And I got to tell you, this guy is something special here, Gabe. I don't know if you had a chance to check him out. He's a kid that really does use his height, his jab, really something special being built up there. So kind of interested in finding out a little bit more. I know he's been getting a lot of sponsorships, like from Nike and et cetera. So I think, you know, there's a building of a star here. How much we don't really know yet, because we still got to see him complete the Olympics. I think he is a part of the Olympians already. I'm not sure. So we'll find out when they call in. But I definitely see a lot more pro style in this kid than amateur style.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of the tools. You know, I mean, it's always early to tell.
Right.
Yeah, he'll be going through the Olympics this time around. And he's only, I think, 19.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a big transition from amateurs to pros, and there's a long way to go. You know, I think it's something we talk about all the time. But he's got a hell of a story. He's got a really solid background. He seems to be a very mature young guy. And his PR people are really pushing him with the endorsements and all that stuff. So,
He's going to be a host on ESPN, you know, as talking about the fights on the when they're back on air again. And he's a kid that definitely has a really good personality that you can listen to and talk to. And he's broken some records. You know, what I've been told, he's broke it's the putt stats or something for Fernando Vargas. He's still holding in amateurs, and then Shane Mosley and Oscar De La Hoya. So there's a lot of promise in this kid. You know, I don't know. I'm a little curious of what happened because I know there were negotiations with the Matadors. He was supposed to be part of that team, but it didn't come down to it. But as soon as if he calls in, we'll find out a little bit more about Jose Ramirez. This kid, though, Google him up, get him on YouTube, check him out, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. He's a really good he's a good future as an amateur in boxing. But let's patch in another fight fan. Dave Chim didn't put your name up here for me, brothers, but I'm going to just send out your I'm going to put out your area code, 973. He wants to talk Cotto and possibility of 154 tournament. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, how's it going, man? It's nice GTO.
What's up, brother? How you doing?
All right. Yeah, man, seeing what you guys think of the rumors. I mean, I know that 154-pound tournament is about as far-fetched as Pacquiao Mayweather getting done, simply because there's just too many protected fighters at that weight class. I mean, you got Canelo, who's obviously, you know, a draw on his own and doesn't
right.
need a tournament. Then you got, you know, Kirkland, who just came off a big win and doesn't need a tournament as well. But hypothetically speaking, it would be great. I mean, you could still put Angulo in it. You could keep Kirkland in it. You could finally get some usage out of K-9 and possibly see Canelo matched up against some fighters his age and, in a talent bracket. It would make for good TV, I think. And
I think if
with all the
if
ups
the right
and downs.
Fights,
go ahead.
Well, if the right fights get made, and the division's too stacked for the right fights to not get made. You know, there's a lot of talent. There's not a lot of filler in this division. You know, you got your champions in Cotto and Austin Trout, or the WBA super and regular champion.
Right.
You got the WBC's Sal Alvarez with his shield. You've got the IBF Cornelius Bundridge, who's just in dry dock. I don't know what he's doing. And then you've got Zarbak Beysangarov from, the WBO's version. And then underneath that, there's just nothing but talent. Paul Williams.
Devon Rodriguez.
Monterosian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've also got Arislandi Lara.
You got James Kirkland in the mix. Sekou Powell is always kind of right there. You know, he's a guy that you could make a fight with if you needed to round it out. And you got Austin Trout. You got Molina versus Kirkland. Those guys are going to happen. It's going to be incumbent on the rest of the guys, like Saul Alvarez, all the champions. I think Cotto is kind of in a different category, though, because he's looking for a super fight. He's not looking to help anybody make a name. He wants an established name to fight him. So you kind of have to throw him out, in a sense. But all the rest of the fights, I mean, why doesn't Trout and Bundridge get it on? You know, there's no reason that the fight doesn't happen. You also got Nobuhiro Ishida, who's also hanging around.
Yeah.
I don't think we necessarily need a tournament so much as we need these guys to all fight each other. You know, Vonis Martirosyan versus any of the title holders would be great. Him versus Alvarez would be a fun fight. Paul Williams.
Well, the tournament idea is what would get these fights to actually happen because, I mean, we haven't seen his Landry Laura since he punished the Punisher and got robbed.
Right.
And we haven't seen Paul Williams either, for that matter. And Molina was in talks of fighting Paul Williams, and now he's getting Kirkland, where I'm sure he probably would have made more money fighting Paul Williams. And again, Canelo just isn't giving anyone the opportunity who is a good fighter. Same thing for Cotto. Like you said, he wants a super fight, and, you know, there's rumors of him, you know, things like him speaking of Pacquiao or his, you know, his handlers talking to Pacquiao, which makes no sense. Nobody wants to see that again. But, you know, Trout can't get on U.S. TV, but a tournament will help all these fights. Trout can't get on U.S. TV. K-9.
He was just on
U.S.
TV, though.
He was on Showtime. Right.
Yeah, his first time.
Well, yeah, but that's just the beginning. I mean, I think that we're going to end up seeing him again. I think I hear what you're saying,
Gabe, this is a big problem though, because I hear what you're saying too, Jill. But the thing is that Canelo, Golden Boy, wouldn't even think of doing it. I mean, I think they would put Lara and Trout and Martirosyan and all these other guys. Well, no, you got to cut Martirosyan out of the equation because Top Rank won't do that type of deal when they feel they can do other things, just like how they neglected to be in the super middleweight or the bantamweight tournament. But you get all these.
With them, they would make an exception.
Maybe.
I think they're at that point with the end of the rope with him.
Right.
I think they would draw them out.
Right, but what it does, what it does with a 54 tournament is that it allows Canelo to sit out and continue doing the BS that he's doing now, getting these fights that we don't want to see because I don't think he will participate or Golden Boy will participate their Golden Goose with a tournament. You know, they would allow all the other guys fight each other, and then he still waits around maybe 2 years out, continues to be champion, and lets everybody fight for the meat. I say that I think it's more force-fed to him right now because there is no agenda and there are champions and contenders that look to go after this guy. I think the pressure of that happening is a lot more it's a lot more realistic than setting something up that's going to benefit Canelo in the long run. I'd hate to see that happen because I have a huge feeling Golden Boy would not put Canelo in any type of tournament because they're trying to save the boy.
No, I don't think it happens. It just isn't. There's a lot of pieces there, but you know, Golden Boy actually holds a lot of those pieces. They hold Arislandi Lara. They've got you know Canelo, and they've got James Kirkland. They've got three parts of a tournament. They could do it, but you know, and maybe they would protect Canelo by treating him like the Lucien Boutte and keeping him out of it. But I think it would lower his credibility more than anything for him not to be a part of it. He's the signpost. He's the guy that everybody wants to fight.
Right.
So, to me, I just think this is the path that I laid out. I think that they're going to follow with Kirkland. He's going to fight Carlos Molina. He's probably going to knock him out in like 8 rounds, 9 rounds. Maybe not. Maybe he goes to the decision, but I think he beats him. And then they go after Cornelius Bundridge or they go after Austin Trout, two guys with, you know, Don King – is willing to job out any of his guys. That's Bundridge, and certainly Austin Trout's not with a major promoter, and they're going to want to take that fight and get a TV deal, and they get Kirkland a title, or
right.
They get options on the guy that wins, and then maybe you make the Saul Alvarez fight, maybe not, you know.
Yeah.
You still got Eric Landy-Lara you can throw in there as a defense and put him in the mix. Yeah, people got to remember he's been sitting on dry dock, but he also took a major injury in that fight. His head,
mm-hmm.
he grew like a whole other head. So I think he's probably just been resting, rightfully so, through all this.
Yeah, true. All right, brother, I'm going to put you on hold, man. Thanks for calling in. We're going to patch in some other
Thank
fight
you,
fans
sir.
That want to talk. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's patch in. Let me see. Ooh, man, we got a lot of calls today. And nobody wants to talk about Adner Morris and Arbeco yet. But let's go with Jose, who wants to talk about Canelo and the middleweights. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leave It in the Ring.
Hello. First of all, I'm Jose Ramirez, 132 U.S. Olympic trial champion for USA. And Canelo is a good fighter. He's doing his thing right now in the ring. But I do agree that they're still taking care of him. They're still building him up to become a better fighter. And he's still young. Still has a couple years. That before he proves himself. He's a great champion, but there's a lot of fighters even around his weight class, like in the 160s. There's Chavez, there's Maravilla, and then there's a lot of other great Cotto also, and Canelo. He's so far impressed a lot of people, and he's so young. So as he continues to get that experience and. Maybe soon. Then they'll start fighting. Ground on people, and now I feel like they're still taking care of him.
Right.
Like they should, because he is making a lot of money. He is bringing a lot of popularity into Golden Boy. So they they're probably doing the smart thing by taking care of him.
Oh, they're definitely taking care of him. Let me introduce you here really quick, though, Jose, because you caught us off guard. We thought you were a fan calling in. Jose Ramirez, the Olympian. And first off, man, how you doing, man? I see that your publicist is doing a lot of good work for you. And I had a chance to watch that one fight where they took it from you. I can't remember exactly. I think it was it Pan Am Games that you were doing or
the World Championships. Was the World Championships? It was against the 2007 World Champion, 2009 World Champion, and 2011 World Champion, as well as the 2008 gold medalist for he's from Ukraine. It was a good fight, close fight. Many people thought it was very controversial in a point, but.
I thought you clearly won that. I mean, I didn't see him do. There were scoring points for him that he clearly didn't even land, and there was a lot of shots that you were throwing that were landing. You had control of the fight. You had ring generalship. You were using your jab phenomenally, and you were throwing combinations fluently. And I was kind of thrown back when they didn't give you that decision. I thought it was complete BS. I mean, how old are you right now? You're what, 19?
I'm 19 years old. Yeah.
So when you walk away from something like that, what is your first thought? I mean, I always hate to see a guy that puts in everything, their heart, and when it's taken from them, I always wonder, what's the aftermath? What's the thought?
Well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It makes me wanna come back, train harder. Put some more, what I put in, I guess it wasn't enough. Let it come back, put some more in. But now I'll come back with this, with this killer instinct, knowing that, I'm up there in that level, fighting the best. I fought the best, they see this guy as a pound for pound best amateur boxing in the world. And I was right with them, so I try to switch it up more into a positive thing where, to motivate myself, knowing that that if I give this guy, a hell of a fight, then if I come back and just work and train and I go back, there'll be no doubt next time that I'll win this fight or any fight, and it, you know, boosts my confidence a little bit in a way. But
right.
Yeah, this, I mean, it does hurt, you know, it hurts every fighter, you know, when you know you did, you know, just enough, but sometimes just enough is not really enough. And so I gotta be realistic, and I gotta take the decision, gotta learn how to, you know, how to, you know, lose and make the loss, you know, of winning something that, you know, in a positive way by, you know, coming back and working on what I need to work on. And you know, I feel like, you know, the lack of experience, even for USA, you know, going international, they've been really, it's been a lack of international experience. And so, you know, the other guy, you know, he's been out there, he's been known, you know, so, but, you know, it's kind of, a lot of judges were just looking at him fight, you know, they were just looking at him. It's like they were just looking at one boxer's fight, and because of his name. But it's tough, and you know, it makes me want to just, you know, jump in the pros. But you know, I got a goal, and the goal is, you know, is to be the best as an Olympian, and then go pro, and then be the best.
I was going to ask you that too, though. You know, like, why wasn't the decision of going into the to the pros? Because so many guys like Jose Benavides Jr. and what's the other kid?
Frankie Gomez.
They decided not to do that. They decided to just kind of veer into the pros. What was the decision of saying, you know what, I'm going to hold off, go to the Olympics, and then see what happens from there?
Oh, because when I started winning, you know, I won both of my I won both of the JOs, and I won the US. I was the best one as a 15-year-old. In the nation, and then I went back and did it again, and then I turned open. I did it again as a 17-year-old, won the U.S. men's, and then I went back, and as an 18-year-old, you know, I won the U.S. men's. So I was like, man, you know, I just the Olympics are coming up, you know, might as well just, you know, give it a try. And as an athlete, you know, I feel like, you know, every, you know, a dream to become an Olympian is, you know, it's, you know, something unbelievable, but it's tougher now, and in this, you know, this amateur boxing, you know, it sometimes is very, you know, they use a lot of politics, and,
right.
And it does, you know, it makes me want to go pro, like, you know, but I just, you know, knowing if I was to bring a gold medal to my town, it would just mean a lot, you know, so much to them, you know, I will open up the windows for my town with the, you know, about 9,000 people in. You know, I haven't. You know the fact that, you know, I'll be an Olympian. It's motivated a lot of kids to get into sports, get into boxing, get into something like champions, Olympians, big companies, small towns, and I just the fact that, you know, everything I could do with the resume, if I was an Olympian in my resume, there's so much you could do. But you know, I'm only 19 years old, so it's not like I'm 22.
Jose, can you hear me, brother? You're really cutting out really, really bad. Can you walk somewhere where we can get better reception?
Sure. Just give me a minute.
There we go.
Yeah, like, so I just want to give it a try, give it my best, and if, you know, if it doesn't work out, then I'll go pro. But I at least want to know that I gave it a try.
Right. Absolutely.
So.
Let me.
Just a lot of people that don't. This is Gabe Montoya, co-host here. There's a lot of people that don't know your story, don't know where you've come from, how you've gotten to this place. Just take us back to the beginning, you know, where you grew up, and how you first got started in boxing.
I come from, I don't know, right to California, between LA.
You're still breaking up. We're having trouble hearing you a little bit.
Maybe it's the fact that I'm calling from my cell phone.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah.
I should probably
turn pro, you'll get one of those satellite phones.
Yeah. I'm in, so it's not the best.
That's okay.
So
how'd you get started?
I got started, you know, as a, I was 7 years old. I was doing soccer. I was in running. I was just an overall athlete. I had a lot of energy in me. I was always a team captain in PE. But there was a part of me was just very competitive in everything I did. I was very competitive, and I really didn't like to lose. And you know, I was just known as a team captain, you know. But I wasn't the fun kid in school. I was shy, but they're always, you know, the captain. I was just known as the captain. I wanted to be in someone's team because I was fun at it, you know, and I would make the sport fun. And so I just wanted to meet some friends, and the gym opened up here because of the street. My father, he had across the street from my house, about a block away from my house. My father, he signed an application for me because I had too much energy, and the sports I was doing only lasted 2 months, or 3 months, and he took me in there. Yeah, he wanted me to do something all year long, and well, I went in there. The reason why, I went in there, I hit the timing back, and the timing back hit me back. So the same way I walked in, I walked in very sneaky, hit the bag, got hit back, and then I just left the gym, and I went back. The reason why I went back is because I started seeing a lot of kids socializing, and I wanted to go and socialize with them, and that's the reason why I went back to the gym, because it was like a club, and they used to hang out there, and I wanted to go and socialize. But as soon as I walked in there, I remember seeing that bag again, the timing bag, the double end bag, and I started hitting it. And then, you know, I was like, man, I was a little bit behind because I had left for like a couple months. And so there was already kids with two, three amateur fights. And I was behind, so I wanted to catch up. And I just forgot about everyone who was around. And I just started training and I got my license. I was 8 years old, and I got my license like a month. It took me a month to get my license, 2 months to get my first fight, and I gave that kid an A count. The trophy that I got was, it was about 15 pounds, about 1 feet tall, but I was only 5'7", around 5'7" pounds. So you know, that was a big trophy compared to compared to the ones I would get in soccer. Compared to the ones, you know. So I was like, man, it took me less than 10 minutes to get a trophy like this, you know. That's a good deal. It's a good deal. And
in a boxing gym where, like, it's that same, like you talk about socializing and the kind of camaraderie of a team. There's that same feeling in a boxing gym, but at the same time, for a competitive person, it's all about individual achievement when the bell rings. Does that kind of appeal to you?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is probably, you know, you, your coach, and probably, you know, your sparring partners, you know. But at the end of the day, boxing, you know, you're the one that's in there. You're the one that has to think, you know. The coach can't make the moves for you. He could tell you, you know, because he sees better openings than what you do. But I was very competitive. Like I said, I was just wanted to learn. I was behind, and I wanted just to. Instead of socializing at the end of practice, I would just stay in the bag and hey, go extra rounds in the bag. And then my coach started, you know, noticing the, you know, how much I was putting into it. And just continuing on, the first fight, like I said, I got a humongous trophy. I was happy, you know, my hand was raised, and in the middle, you know, it was a big gym. It was a big show. And it was in Fresno, California. There was at least a good 400 people around, and they were just, you know, they were just clapping. They were, you know, telling me good job, you know, in Spanish and in English. And I was just, man, I was enjoying it. I was enjoying all that. And then as soon as I walked to my family that were there, man, I just seen the smiles. You know, I really didn't think nothing about boxing. I just it was a good sport. I liked it. You know, I liked the throw awards.
You weren't even really a boxing fan going in, but now are you more of a student of the game? Do you study fighters?
Yeah, of course, I happen to study. I try to be very open-minded, very coachable, and I take everything I like, everything that happens to work to a fighter, I take it and, I kind of create my own little toolbox and just put my tools in there, and, I could use them, and, sometimes it won't work, sometimes it will, but, the more toolboxes, the more tools you have in your box, the more opportunities you have to do something in the ring.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. Jose, let me ask you this, because right now, you're waiting for the Olympics to start and stuff. What activities are you doing to keep yourself sharp and in shape?
I'm doing a lot of cardio. I'm taking it easy, like I'm fine because of the holidays, but I'm doing a lot of cardio. I actually have a strength and conditioning coach who's from Fresno. His name is Charles. He's been a good strength and conditioning coach, and I'm just working on my legs, getting power from my legs, because they do say I'm pretty big for lightweight. I'm a pretty big guy for lightweight.
Yeah,
but,
you are, man.
I got very good power, but the power does, when you're fighting, the first thing that gets tired is your legs. When your legs get tired, then it's kind of hard for you for the power to come, and then your speed starts slowing down too. So I'm working a lot of my legs, a lot of cardio, a lot of core workouts for my core, and stuff like that. I'm running in the mornings, doing a lot of sprints, stairs, and everything. I tend to learn, like in boxing, before I used to run, a lot of miles, I put in a lot of miles, and now I do less miles, but I do most explosive things, instead of running 7 miles a day, I do about 4 to 5 miles a day, and then I do a lot of explosive things, because in boxing it is about being explosive. And
are you training in Fresno right now? I mean, is that where you normally stay at?
No, I'm still in Avenue. I still train here in Avenue. I go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to Fresno to do my strength and conditioning in the mornings. And I drive to Fresno about an hour and 5 minutes.
So let me ask you this, because I had heard, and I'm not, maybe you can clear this up for me, was that there was a strong possibility you were going to go into the team of the Matadors to keep you active. If the rumors are true, what happened? Why didn't you sign on with the league?
The Matadors actually did. They wanted me to be part of the team. But I happen to injure my hand a little bit, so uh-huh. I'd rather not make it worse for my wrist. But I want to stay home for the holiday. I've been traveling too much away from my family. I've been gone from my family too much, and I feel like December is like the only month I'm gonna have here with my family, to enjoy the holidays. And then as soon as the year starts, my sparring starts, my traveling to go train somewhere else, begins. And then in March, have competition, in Colorado, and then in Brazil later on March, and then the London Games. So
right.
I'm gonna be busy. So I felt like, I haven't taken a break in boxing for the last 2-3 years. I haven't taken one small break. I've just been training all year long, fighting all year long, about 20 fights in the last, about 20 something fights a year, and I just wanted to relax I want to see myself, I want to see my power without a hager, I want to see what can I do with smaller gloves, but I talked to my coach, I talked to my mom, my dad, and they're like, hey, you could do it, but the best thing, it would be nice also to just rather go pro, to skip that semi-pro, to
right.
just go pro and don't explore. I don't want people to see me, what I could do in the semi-pro when it's similar to pros. I just want to, to go pro, and then, I want to surprise many people and be like, who's that? Man, Jose. And then there's a lot of friends who went pro, and they just bought a pro. And they're sending me messages, saying that they can't wait for me to go pro.
Yeah, and to put it in perspective for people too,
I mean, I cover the Matadors pretty closely. And some of those guys, you know, Rushy Warren's a guy that's going to be joining you on the Olympic team, three-time guy.
Right.
But a lot of the other guys, you know, they've won national championships, maybe one or two. They're good amateurs, but it's a way to kind of break through and develop as a draw maybe a little bit or a name beforehand. But for people that don't know your background, you grew up in Avenel, California. You still live there. There's like 15,000 people that came out of them. Or 15,000 people that live there. You came out of there. You're now going to be a 2012 London Olympian with a lot of people are favoring you to take home a medal. You got 130 amateur wins, 10 national titles, 5 USA consecutive golds, and a 4.0 grade point average. There's no reason why you can't go to the Olympics, win a medal, and come out and sign with one of the two top promoters in the league. You don't really need to do the semi-pro thing.
And you've got endorsements already. That's what I'm hearing too, right, Jose? You've already got like Nike and a couple other people that are backing you on your move on the Olympics, right?
Yeah, I've actually been. There's some seeing, you know, like even Freddie Roach that was training me, and like people are getting to see. I don't know. I feel like, you know, I just love this. I just love doing this sport. When I do it, just I do it with this passion that they see and. And I've been blessed, to get. I was welcomed to the Nike family a couple of weeks ago. I just did my first endorsement and my endorsement deal with Wonderful Pistachios, and who's been a great help, you know. And I've realized 2 weeks competition, which is like an Under Armour, and which is like the new Under Armour stuff, and from Australia, which is a makes me, you know, I train with it, and, you know, good, and it helps you, it helps my muscles. My muscles not get swollen when I train.
Right.
And I also call hydrated water, and that's has electrolytes, and alkaline. It's water, and also helps me perform better. So yeah, I've been getting all this major attention and this publicity. That, you know, sometimes I just, and I just want to go, you know, prove myself, you know, but just one step at a time. And I know what I'm doing, and I'm not going to achieve the goals and get there.
Well, that's the key there, is to have a little bit of patience and you know, keep working the way you're working there, Jose. Hey, I'm not sure if Gabriel has any more questions. I'm all questioned out with you. I just want to ask you. When you get out to Fresno, have Rick give me a call, man. I'm not that far away from there. I'd like to go down and see you train a little bit, do your cardio.
I'll tell Rick to give you a call, I would love for anybody to come out and support and see me train, and I appreciate that.
Absolutely, brother. You take care, man. Thanks for calling in and speaking to us here, and we wish you all the luck. Bring that medal home.
Thank you. And I appreciate this having me here.
No
you
problem.
Okay,
you take
you guys
care.
Have a good night.
You
bye.
Too. You know, I really want to see this kid do something. I think it's great that he decided not to go pros and decided to go to the Olympics. Because, you know, Gabe, a lot of times we're losing a lot of potential Olympians to I'm reading what Gabriel's telling me right now. We're losing a lot of Olympians to the pro rankings, and we're missing out development, you know, because everybody's chasing that mighty dollar. And this is good that this kid has got his head on his shoulder and he's listening to what's, he's really evaluating what's really his surrounding and understanding that there's other possibilities, you know what I mean? It may take a little longer, but having patience, you end up getting to that big pot of gold. And I think exactly what he has. And I've seen this kid, I'm telling you, he's exciting. He's got the pro amateur style, but at the same time, you know, he still needs development, and there's nothing wrong with it, you know, going the route he's going. I think it's exciting, and it definitely, if you're a boxing head out there, you got to support his decision and root for him. Jose Ramirez, make sure you root for him. And he's also USA Boxing 2012 on Twitter, so go ahead and follow him there. Make sure you follow him and give him a shout-out. He was on Leaving the Ring, and I'm going to try to make it out there, go check him out, and also make sure that he gets back on here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, Gabe, you there, brother? Did I lose you? I think he's on the other line. He's doing something right now. Hey, Fight fans, you want to call in? Definitely can. The number is 347-215-7598. Call in and speak to us here. Myself, Dave Duenas, and then Gable Montoya. And you first have to go through Mr. David Chen, who's a producer of the show. Hey, let's talk some Adner Morris and Joseph Abeko. Nobody's been talking about it, so let's talk about that there. You know, I got to tell you this. You know, I saw a few people saying that Adner Morris was being, he was very dominant. I saw a really back-and-forth type of fight. I saw Joseph Abeko really throw his style of fighting out the door and was being aggressive like what I had talked about, you know. But Adner Morris, man, you got to just sit there and you got to admit, he is really, really has developed into his zone. This is a guy that, you know, in the beginning he showed a one-dimensional style. He's starting to show a lot more craft into his arsenal. So I was really excited to see what he was doing. It was an exciting fight. It was back and forth, you know, but Morris just got the upper hand. You know, he was doing what he had to do in the inside. He was doing what he had to do in the outside. Joseph was doing some success with his jab, opening up the eye of Adner Morris, but it was just not enough. It wasn't enough for Joseph Abeko to jump on him or take advantage or take control of the fight. I thought Morris' ring generalship was on par. He did exactly what he needed to do. He did his homework, and that whole, you know, controversy that Showtime keep bringing up over and over and over and over again, it didn't affect the kid. It did affect Joseph Abeko, though. To me, Joseph Abeko came in more or less thinking that he was going to get helped by the ref or anybody outside of the ring. And that, to me, just kind of threw him out of the game plan because he was looking for somebody to justify what happened in the last fight. And that, to me, throws everything off, you know, because now you're focused on somebody giving you a handout. Where Morris was, to me, was focused on what was happening at the moment, which is a fight. You know, yeah, there was a couple of things in there that the ref might have, should have, could have kind of jumped on, but the fact it was that it was a fight, and it was a clean fight. There was some, you know, rabbit punching, you know, there was hands behind the head, but it never really got out of control. Never really fell into what it did in the first time around. So, to me, it was a great matchup in the way they did things. okay. It was a great way. Gable just screwed me up, guys. I apologize. He just screwed me up right now. He's texting me because he's on the other line. He's discussing something with somebody that I'll get back to you on that. Gable, are you there?
I am. I'm back. Sorry about that, man. It was just kind of a call I had to take. We should have some good interview stuff coming up. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, well, the name that you just threw out there for me, I definitely think, yeah, absolutely. I'm talking about Adner Morris and Joseph Abeko. I'm talking about, you know, the success that he had. I'll kind of just do the quick rundown of what I was talking about here, Gabe, was that, you know, with Joseph Abeko, to me, going in this fight, the whole big question was how Morris was going to handle the whole controversy and going in. Is he going to change him up? Is he going to be concentrating and not trying to land the blows? Was he going to throw him out of his game plan? But instead, to me, I saw Joseph Abeko going in kind of looking for a handout, kind of looking for the ref to intervene, and it became more of a focus for him. You know, when, you know, Morris did land in the bow line or in the body, he would always turn to the ref. So to me, it really looked like he was out of focus of what was happening. Where Morris stayed into the fight, he stayed disciplined, he stayed in what was happening in the moment in their fight, and I think that was the big telling in this fight. You know, and right away, I got to say this: I want to see Nonito Dornier versus Adner Morris. In the beginning, maybe, you know, two fights back when he fought Victor Chinian, I was like, you know what, he still needs more seasoning. This time around, though, I really think that that's a very competitive fight. I'd like to see, you know, Nonito possibly go at him. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you, man. I thought Morris fought a beautiful fight, and it was bummed that the Golden Boy and Showtime decided to counter-program because it got overshadowed. We'd be talking all so long about Abner Morris instead of the card, which was a fun card, but was less meaningful in the grand scheme of things, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like Wiener is getting richer, you know, making more millions, film at 11. Whereas, you know, this fight, I thought Abner really matured. He decided to do one thing and do it well, rather than try to mix it up and change tactics. Like we had talked about, it was going to be a fight of adjustments. And really his adjustment was, I'm going to just box. And Agbeko was never able to really get a rhythm, get some sort of command of the fight. It was really hard to give him rounds. I gave him like two or three rounds. I thought Abner even, and then he had a cut, you know, and he showed the maturity and just didn't even bother him. They handled the cut really well. It bled at times, but it was never really a factor. I thought he was just great. And coming out of it, I thought exactly what you just said. Now I want to see Donaire versus Morris. And there's no
yep.
way, to me, it's kind of the way Khan claims 140. There's no way that Donaire can claim 118 and say he was the best there without facing after Morris. There's just,
exactly.
You can't tell me any other thing.
No,
you know?
definitely you can't. You know, and with Moreno, what he did with Victor Chin, you know, we had a couple emails talking about how Vic is done, he's over with. To tell you the truth, I didn't see that. I saw the Raging Bull coming forward, throwing a lot of shots, maybe a step from what he used to be, but he had a guy that just was elusive and knew how to hold him back. You know, worked the body fairly well, would really slow down Vic Darchinian. But at the same time, he had Vic just completely frustrated, where Vic was throwing everything out of his arsenal bag and couldn't land. And you know what? A lot of times, you go back with the Cotto and Margarito fight, when you're punching somebody with all you got and nothing's happening, that's a mental meltdown. Now, with Vic Darchinian, he was throwing everything, couldn't land anything. Guess what? That was a mental meltdown for him as well. You know, and at the end, when they had the post-interview, he basically told you, I couldn't land anything. You know, and that really takes a lot out of a fighter, especially, you know, when you're hitting nothing but air, you end up losing stamina. And then when you're getting pop shot in the body, same thing. Those tires are starting to get a little bit more flattened, you know, so Moreno really just came out of nowhere. We said that, you know, when you get a guy like that coming from Colombia, right, you never write him off the chart. And he definitely added himself to the chart and made the bantamweight division a little bit more interesting, a fun name, a fun guy to watch. I thought he was entertaining, and he definitely had a setup for the Modest Adebeko. Both great fights on the Showtime, man. I was entertained through both fights.
I wasn't entertained by the Argentinian fight at all, dude.
Really?
And
I was entertained.
No, not at all. I was not. I mean, it must have been better on TV. Al Bernstein was like, he asked me what I thought, and I was like, it was all right. You know, it wasn't. I've seen better Anselmo Moreno fights. And he was like, you know, I disagree completely. And he thought he was superb, I think was the word he used.
I thought it was great. He was incredible. Vic was throwing
was
some
beautiful, you know.
Yeah,
I'll
he was
give
throwing
him that.
Big shots at him, and he couldn't land anything. But the thing that I liked the most was that it was big shots thrown at him, and he didn't dance around out of, you know, dance out of the pocket. He stayed in that pocket, used the jab, throw the body shots, which could have been something where some folks just, you know, didn't really see. But I got to tell you, I've always been a big.
It must have looked good on TV.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. I was like, oh, you know, there were some shots. I mean, yeah, the beginning run of the first rounds, man, I got to admit, I was like, you know, all right, pounding a few beers. Okay, come on, man, let's get it. And then as soon as that third, fourth round just started gearing up, the wheels started really turning. I started to get really into the fight. And at the end of it, I just said, I want to see this kid again. I got to see this kid again. You know, now, is he a world beater? No. But he made it enough.
He might be. I mean, he might be. His defense is tricky, man. He's got his own rhythm.
Yeah.
He's got a very, very sound focus. He would be a problem, I think, for anybody. I mean, we were saying that before this fight. To me, it just didn't have, I don't know. Maybe it was, you know, looking at both these productions. Like, you know, Steve went to New York. I saw, you know, everybody went to New York and saw this grand production. They basically went to boxing's version of Broadway. They went to the newly renovated Garden. There's, you know, four good fights on the undercard. There's drama with Rios' week. They're in New York during Christmas time. For me, I felt like I was at the office Christmas party, and it was mandatory. They're down in Anaheim, and all they really sprung for was, like, pretzels and, like, some punch. And they had some good fights.
Right.
You know, they had a really good BJ. But that was about it. And it almost showed in the way that both companies promoted these events, not in terms of how much they pushed them, because I think Golden Boy pushed them on the press, but they did, you know, press conferences and conference calls, but the bells and whistles,
right,
it was a dead atmosphere. I mean, they only sold like 1,000 tickets or 1,100, but they were able to get 4,000 people in the building, and you know, there was some, like the Molina fight was actually an exciting fight, and I was really into it because they were locals, but the atmosphere for the Moreno fight was dead. There were some cheers here and there, but it wasn't anything to write home about. The main event, I thought there was a lot more drama. But overall, like, you know, they had a DJ, but they didn't have, like, I mean, you saw the HBO pay-per-view, you know, in the Garden. They had that big,
right,
whatever the hell you call it, conical thing with, you know, HD screen on it. I'm surprised it doesn't spin. They have lasers and the crazy lights for their entrances. And,
right.
You know,
the strobe lights.
Like you're in an empty. Yeah, we didn't even get strobe lights or bubbles. You know, it was like it was just some music and dude came out. You know, even the Corona girls weren't even that good this time around.
Terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was, you know, and I just wish boxing wouldn't do that to itself, because to me it felt like the way they promoted it was admitting defeat. Like, yeah, we know there's a better, like, hot model party across town. We decided to throw a party too, you know?
Yeah.
And we're not going to spend much money on it. We're not really going to do the bells and whistles, because we know ain't nobody going to be here anyways, you know? Even Press Row was hilarious. You'd, like, turn, and there'd be, like, two rows of empty, and you'd be, like, talking to some dude, like, across the way. Me and Luis from the boxing lab sat, like, five empty people across from each other, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
How do you have it? Oh, I got, you know, in a shutout from Moreno. Okay.
you mean you didn't take the bullhorn?
Moreno!
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, it's fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. We got like 30 more minutes here left on Leave It in the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. 347-215-7598. I tell you what, me and Gabriel got a lot of stuff cooking for the new year, a lot of surprising stuff that we're working on and putting a lot of work. If you haven't went and picked up the Undisputed magazine yet, what are you waiting for, man? If you're a true boxing head, go over there and purchase it. It's only $1.99 or $9.99 for the whole year. A lot of interesting stuff. Our December magazine, man, I'm very proud of, because we put that together. I did. You know, but with all the writers on there that put in all the hard work. So show them the appreciation. You know, you can see read some great articles by Esteban Walters. It's just too great. You can see a lot of, like, you know, Sean Smith is a new writer for Undisputed. Even our UK guys, man, you know, Lee Elford and Mike Jones, these guys put in a lot of work. Jose Santana. Huh?
Mike Jones.
Yeah, no, not the fighter. Mike Jones, the writer.
The rapper,
yeah. You know, but, hey, let's get down to our predictions of what's going to be happening this Saturday night here, Gabe. Let's go with you. What do you think?
Breaking down Mitchell versus Abragamov, I think it's the perfect fight for Seth Mitchell at this point.
Yeah.
He's getting introduced to HBO Airwaves, the subscribers there who are dying. They're just dying for a heavyweight to get behind. He's well spoken. He fights like he speaks. It's very crisp and clean. There's not a lot of special effects. He doesn't move his head enough, in my opinion. But he knows that his strengths are to fight tall behind a jab and use combinations, and he does it, and he's aggressive. I think he takes out Abragamov around, like, probably somewhere between 8 and 10.
I think so too, man. I'm not gonna. I think I'm gonna go with the same pick that you're getting here. I'm getting somebody's read this text right now saying that Paul Williams is gonna be facing Ishida after all on January 21st on Showtime. I guess we're gonna have to make a couple calls to find out whether or not that's gonna really happen here. Not sure. So we'll find out a little later. I'll let you guys know, or Gable will get on Twitter and let everybody know whether or not there's any truth to that. Oh, I'm already seeing some few guys too even tweeting it out already. I got the same pick for you. Now, the next fight is the main event, which is Amir Khan versus Lamont Peterson. What's your take about that one? And I'll go right after you.
I think it's a tough fight. I think that You got me thinking with it. Thank you for throwing the Paul Williams bomb at me. I mean, making me go first while I'm texting to confirm it. I think it's going to be a good fight, first off. You know, I think that Peterson has enough, and he's at home, he's motivated enough to kind of push forward and be greater than himself for our night. Everything's on the line for him here. He's got, you know, a shot at two belts. It ain't going to come again, especially with a guy that is potentially vulnerable. He keeps talking about 147. He keeps talking about Mayweather or this guy or that guy. It is a lot of talk.
Right.
I know Amir trains hard, but this is a mental game also, and I wonder if the focus is completely there to face a guy who's, you know, let's be honest, this is a mandatory defense. This isn't a voluntary defense. He's the IBF mandatory. So he had to do it in order to keep that belt and maybe wait around for Tim Bradley for one last shot at this thing before he goes up to 147. Yesterday he said he's going straight to 147. So he's kind of changing everything that he's saying all the time. Peterson might have him at the right time. He's just got to start sooner. He's got to use his jab more, get that right hand off. He's got to rattle Khan early. But I don't think he's going to do that. I think Khan takes an easy decision. Not easy, scary in spots, particularly late, but he'll take a very clear decision.
You know, Lamont, to me, is that if anything, this is the right time to take advantage of Amir Khan, because everything that you just mentioned right now, you know, he's pretty much all over the place as a scramble when he, in terms of names and people that he wants to face, that there's a strong possibility that he's overlooking Lamont Peterson because Lamont hasn't been successful in his last couple of fights here. So for Lamont, everything really gears up that is beneficial for himself. He could take advantage of a lot of things, but it's the mental plan along with the physical plan that he has to come in with this fight. You know, the jab, like you mentioned, but not just an ordinary jab. He's got a jab. He's got to make sure that jab is placed at the right spots against Amir Khan, from the top to the belly. You know, he's got to really work that jab. And a lot of times, you know, and I'm pretty sure you know this, Gabe, if you start jabbing against the heavy bag for over 30 minutes, your arm starts feeling like a meat grinder, you know. So that's the kind of jab that Lamont's going to have to use. He's going to have to really overuse that jab. But he's also got to do a little praying that Amir Khan didn't take him that serious, that Amir Khan might be coming in trying to jump all over him right away to make a statement, because it's at, you know, Lamont's hometown, that Amir can gas out. And if that's the case, there's the advantage that Lamont needs. There's the advantage that Lamont needs to jump on and make a statement out of, you know, on Amir Khan. So there's a lot of strong possibilities that the Lamont Peterson can take and have a possible win, be the upset special for Saturday night. But it goes back to exactly what you were saying, is the game plan, the mentality, and the crowd may be influencing him to do something a little bit more that he shouldn't do. He shouldn't flirt with. So I really hate to pick against Lamont, because I like his style, and I think that there is a very strong possibility that he can beat Amir Khan, but I'm going to go with Amir Khan on this one. I think that he beats him on a decision. He doesn't stop him, but I think he beats Lamont on a decision, you know?
Yeah, and a decision that Lamont says, I should have done more.
Yeah, exactly, you know. I mean, but you know what, too? Lamont has been dropped, you know, before, but we've seen him really stay composed, you know, get back up, and he doesn't panic. That's the one good thing that I see that the kid does carry. He doesn't really panic when he's in trouble, but the thing that he does fall apart on is that when he is in trouble, he opens up and he squares up a little bit too much, rather than just falling back and using what is more of his natural skill, which is be elusive, a counterpuncher, slip punches, make it a boring fight. That's a Lamont that a lot of folks didn't want to face in the beginning. The Lamont that we've been seeing in recent, that's where everybody's been picking his name out of the boxing hat.
Yeah, and I think also, though, he's fought his way into contention. You know, this is, like I said, it's a mandatory shot. So I thought that fight with Victor Caio was a big step for him. He started early, and he just kind of kept pressing on the gas until he was able to get it done. So maybe, you know, he does that, where he just kind of presses into Amir Khan, smothers his shots, and works that body and tries to just make it a rough fight. I think that's his best bet.
That's his best bet. But Amir Khan is such a bigger fighter than Victor Cagney that he was able to get that. You know what I mean? He was able to allow him to kind of gas out and kind of control him out on the outside because Lamont looks so much bigger. Where this time around, I don't know. I'm not really sold on if that's going to be the right move for him to do just because he's got a taller, lankier, and a bigger guy that his body-wise, he's going to be coming in, you know, a little bit lighter version of a 154-pound fighter.
Yeah, that is true. You know, size, I think Amir is going to be the bigger guy.
Right.
Is he going to be stronger? You know, maybe in terms of punch, he might be a little bit stronger. But he's not really a physical guy.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm curious. We'll see how that all plays out. Well, let's get right into it, the boxing schedule. December 9th, Friday, 2011, at the Kimisee Civic Center in Kimisee, Florida, on Telemundo, Alex Sanchez, 31-7-1, versus Eric Ortiz, 32-12-3. I'm not going to really bother making a pick on that one. At the Excel Arena in London, England, James DeGale, 11-1, versus Jose Guerrero, 29-2-1. I'll take DeGale. I imagine it's just kind of rebuilding, kind of let's keep him busy fight. At the Club Ciclista in Junin, Argentina, we have Lucas Matisse, 28-2, taking on Sergio Omar Priati. He's another Argentine fighter. He's only fought in Argentina, I believe, except for a time in Namibia. I imagine that Lucas Matisse is probably just going to take him out. He's like 31 years old. He's been knocked out three times.
Right.
Not recently, but still.
Right.
This is the get-back fight. We moved to Saturday to the real fights. December 10th, Saturday 2011, at the Convention Center in Washington, D.C. On HBO, Amir Khan, 26-1, versus Lamont Peterson, 29-1-1. We both are going with Khan. HBO in support there has Seth Mitchell, 23-0-1, versus Timur Ibragimov, 33-1. This is the other Ibragimov, not Sultan, who looks a lot like Barney Rubble. We're both going with Seth Mitchell.
Right.
Anthony Peterson takes on Daniel Eitan, and Fernando Guerrero takes on Robert Clyer, who's 11-13. Guerrero's returning after a knockout loss to Grady Brewer. I expect him to blow right through Robert Clyer. At the Estadio Centenario in Los Mochis, Mexico, Juan Salgado, 24-1-1, takes on Fernando Salcido, 44-5-3. This is for the IBF Junior Lightweight belt. I guess I'm going to go with Salgado. I mean, I don't really know much about Salcido, and if you've gotten to 50 fights and I don't know much about you, then, well.
That is a problem.
That says it all.
Yeah, I'll go with your pick as well.
Marine Shea is on support there, 17-2, versus Diana Ayala, 11-5-3. I'm going to go with Marine because I've interviewed her before. At the Civic Center in Atlanta, Georgia, Roy Jones versus Max Alexander, 14-5-2, in the We Can't Let It Go Bowl. Do you take Roy Jones?
I'm taking Roy, man. You know.
All right.
I'm taking Roy. You know, I think that it's going to be a decision. You know, we're really having, you know, I don't know. You know, Roy's trying to get his name back in there, and I'm going to go with the decision. I don't know if he's going to still really go for the kill. He should, because he should go for the kill of retirement. You know what I mean? Retire in Florida. Isn't Florida the capital of people that get old and retire? You know, you're already there. Half of the work is already done. Just get in the old man's chair and rock back and forth. And when HBO calls you down to do commentating, go and do it.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy your retirement.
Yeah.
At the Bell Center in Montreal, unfortunately he can't. That's the sad part. At the Bell Center in Montreal, Canada, David Lemieux, 25-1, versus Joaquim Alcine, 32-2-1. This is a good fight. It's an interesting fight.
It is an interesting fight, and I'm happy to see David Lemieux is back into the ring.
Yeah, he's got a new trainer. He's not with Wes Amber anymore.
Right.
I don't know exactly why. I kind of know exactly why, but they haven't said it on record, so I'm not going to. If Lemieux is dedicated in the gym and he's in shape, he should be able to pound out a good decision, maybe even get a late stoppage against Alcine. Alcine's got a bad chin, But if he isn't doing those things, I see a tough close fight that goes the distance. Adonis Stevenson, 15-1 versus Aaron Pryor Jr., 16-4. And the last notable bout is at the Peterlee Leisure Center in Peterlee, England. Ashley Theophane, 30-4-1 versus Nigel Wright, 24-6-1. It's a tough fight. I think it's going to be kind of ugly with Theophane using his movement to edge out a decision. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
That is your weekend fight schedule. Going back with David Lemieux, too. I mean, this is such a good fight for him as well. Is for, you know, in the beginning. Hold on. Thank you.
I say bless you, but, you know, I feel uncomfortable when I do that.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. We're going back with David Lemieux here. I think that the whole matchup is to finally really kind of shake him out of that whole puncher mind frame that he had, and it's always good. I always like to see, you know, when you have, you know, when you have problems because you're relying so much on your punching power, and it just did not cut it to get you out of a sticky situation. You go to revert and you go back to the drawing board and you look at everything and you start saying, okay, let's fill in the holes that we were missing when we had fought against Marcos Rubio. This time around, I expect him, like you said, unanimous decision, work, and bring another thought of, I'm just not a puncher, I'm also a boxer puncher. So great move for them, man. I hope they're successful. We're going to be definitely watching for there. Again, go get the Undisputed Magazine, the December issue. Look out for the January. We got some big stuff happening for the January issue. You're going to love the cover. I haven't been able to see. I've seen the mock of the cover for our January issue. But once you see it, it's phenomenal, man. I really liked it, you know. And I really like the December issue, too. You got to go out there and check it out. Fight fans, send in your pictures. We were able to put in a lot of fight fans that sent their pictures in for our December issue. So you get a shout-out, and people could see that boxing is still thriving hard and strong. So send us your pictures of any fight. Not any just, you know, what, past weekend. I get a lot of people go, hey, you just only last past week you fight because I didn't go to the fights. No, man. Anytime. It doesn't matter. Even send us a picture of you watching the fights on your television. We don't care. We just want to make sure that it's out there and boxing heads participate. Anyways, like always, it's always fun being on Leaving the Ring. We wanted to do a different pace today, not fill up everything with a bunch of guests on our segment here. But we had a lot of fun, a lot of fight fans calling in, talking, chopping it up here. 3 hours of boxing on Leaving the Ring. Gabriel, I'll talk to you after the show, brother. Everybody else, have a good weekend. Don't drink and drive. And again, we'll see you back on Thursday at 5:00 p.m. West Coast time. 8:00 p.m. East Coast time.
Yeah, man. It was a fun show, as always. I kind of like the threads of things that we talked about, the weight and all that. And Ramirez was fun to finally talk to. And Molina and Vargas moving up to 147. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Vargas calling in.
As always, yeah.
Yeah, dropping a bomb on us.
Next week we'll have Andre Ward. We just did an interview with him. So we'll have that top of the show next week, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot more guests, from what I understand, during my little disappearance during the show. So, Dave, next week, I will see you.
Adios.